Blog Talk Radio.
The Boxing Fix.
The
Boxing Fix. For the boxing addicts who are itching for their fix, we welcome The Boxing Fix. Every Sunday night at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. Join us here at The Boxing Fix.
What's going on, everybody? It's your host, Josh McDaniel, and you're listening to another edition of The Boxing Fix. As many of you guys know, I am a boxing addict, and last night I was treated, and as well as all of us, to an amazing night of fights. Brutal fights, exciting fights, edge of your seat, nail biter fights. It was a hell of a night. I'm going to be have my little co-host, not tonight, my PR superstar is hurt and with the family thing. So I'm going to have our producer, David Chen, chime in from time to time whenever he got something to say about the fights. I know he has a lot on his mind. We have a big show, a fun show tonight. I encourage everyone to call in if you want to talk about anything boxing. Go ahead and call in. The call in is number 347-215-7598. We got a couple of prospects later on in the show. One of them is actually more or less of a contender who is going to have his first title shot coming on. He's been on the show before, Tyrell Hendricks. And then we got a contender who just signed to Thompson Promotions, Javier Torres, who used to fight for the LA Matadors. He will also be coming on and talk about his up-and-coming fight this weekend. So exciting things, and we should have a promoter, Hall of Fame promoter out of the Baltimore area, Jake Smith, coming on to talk about his event that will be coming on this weekend, if I'm not mistaken, on Saturday. So I'm excited about the show, and we're going to get into the boxing glitch real quick. Just, you know, give you a recap and rundown of this past weekend's results. So here we go. On Friday, the 12th of October, over at St. Charles, Missouri, at the Ameristar Casino, former champion and now fighting nobody's on his way to another title shot, probably, because he's an Al Haymon guy. Jermaine Taylor knocked out Raul Munoz in the second round. Jermaine Taylor, man, he fought this guy, and he was a bit overweight, short and overweight for that division. So I don't know what else to say about that. In the lightweight division, Jose Pedraza more down Kevin Farmer and won by a TKO in the eighth round. Farmer seemed to hurt his hand in that round, and then later on, in just a matter of time, he stopped it. Also, in a pretty quick fight, Lamar Rush, who was not known to be a one-punch knockout artist of any sort, TKO Justin Zepeda in the first round of the scheduled eighth-round fight. Zepeda was actually more of the guy that everyone was expecting to come out and brawl and do the knockout artist thing, but Lamar came off with a victory with TKO first round. Also on that card in the light welterweight division, the Senator Ant Williams defeated right now Griffin fight. It was a seventh round TKO and also an eighth round scheduled fight. And the heavyweight Tor Hayter defeated Dominic Alexander in the second round by TKO in the scheduled eight round. Coming from Atlantic City, New Jersey, the Tropicana Hotel Casino over on Friday as well. Doreen Spivey won a hard-fought majority decision. It was a 10-round fight against Rod Salka. Doreen Spivey, a very hard-fought fight. It was a pretty back-and-forth battle, seesaw matchup, and Doreen Spivey came away with a victory in the lightweight division. That was for the NABA lightweight title. Also on that card in super middleweight, Antoine Eakins defeated Steven Tyner by decision in the sixth rounder. It was an interesting and weird card. I heard a lot of delays going on there. It didn't start on time and stuff. Don't know too much about it. Light heavyweight division in that on the undercard, Frankie Filippione defeated Reggie LeCrae by in six rounds, unanimous decision. And heavyweight Dorset Farmwell defeated Sean Lewis in the fourth round TKO in the scheduled sixth rounder. Over in Michigan, Ronald Hearns lost to Derek Finley in the third round TKO of a scheduled eight rounder. This is Hearns' fourth loss and all four losses by knockout. Interesting to see what he does for the rest of his career now. It looks like he's pretty much done. In light middleweight division, Leonardo Tyner defeated Angel Rios by a unanimous decision in the sixth rounder. In light middleweight, Tony Harrison defeated Marcus Jackson, by a sixth-round unanimous decision as well. Over on Friday as well, just a quick note, on Bowler's Exhibition Center in Manchester, United Kingdom, your favorite Hatton, Matthew Hatton, defeated Michael Lomax in an eight-rounder, in a scheduled eight-rounder, my fault, by a first-round TKO. And, yeah, your favorite Hatton, Matthew Hatton, is still fighting and under the radar, as we see. Over in Montreal, Quebec, in Canada, super middleweight Adonis Stevenson defeated Don the Bomb George by a 12th-round TKO in what was a pretty good, exciting fight for the most part. Adonis had Don the Bomb George hurt many times throughout the fight. At times, Adonis looked like he was going to gas out, and George might have been able to come back, but Stevenson continued to put on the pressure and defeated him in the 12th-round TKO. But George gained a lot of more fans than he already has because of the heart and will he put up in that fight. We'll try to talk about that a little bit more later. Also, in what probably would be considered, might be considered the knockout of the year, super middleweight division, David Lemieux knocked out Alvaro Guyana in the first round of a scheduled 10-rounder. Oh, man, that was it was a vicious knockout. It was the NyQuil treatment, as many of you would call it. Man, we'll get Sweet Boxing on later. Ryan Bivens, I'm sure he has a lot to say about that fight. I know he was tweeting it out, and it's also on his site. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Over on Saturday, we're going to move on to Saturday, October 13th. If you guys missed this card, you guys are crazy. Not real true rock boxing fans. At the Home Depot Center, Carson, California. We're going to start off with the main event, super bantamweight Nonito Donaire defeated Toshiaki Nishioka by ninth round TKO in a scheduled 12-round bout. That was for the WBO super bantamweight title. Man, we'll talk about that a little bit more later. Touch on it real quick. It was one-sided, and it almost looked like Nishioka came for a paycheck for the first few rounds until he decided to open up, which got him in trouble. That fight was overshadowed, as many probably predicted, in what might be fight of the year candidate. Look, many would call this, if you're a wrestling fan, I'm gonna have to use this. You guys would love this. It was a slobber knocker. Light welterweight Brandon Rios defeating Mike Mile High Alvarado by seventh round TKO. Man, we're gonna talk a lot about that later. I want to hear what you guys think about that fight. It was an exciting fight. I've watched it four times. After the show, I'm going to watch it for my fifth time. And tomorrow for breakfast, I'm going to watch it for my sixth time. That's how exciting it was. It got me pumped up and my blood boiling. And that was for the vacant WBO Latino light welterweight title. Also on the undercard, top rank, by the way, coming on a hell of a card with a bunch of prospects and contenders. Welterweight Jose Benavidez Jr. from Phoenix, Arizona, defeated Tavo Miranda by unanimous decision in an eight-round fight. Real quick, Benavidez got hurt, though, and we're going to talk about that later and see what that means for Benavidez and where he goes from here. Featherweight, the Russian-Mexican, Evgeny Gradovich, defeated Jose Angel Barranza in a unanimous decision, eight-round fight. Evgeny, continues his movement up in that, in the featherweight division, but seems to, need a lot more work still. Not a lot more work, but, you know, he's not ready to step up into a certain level of competition. But he is very exciting. Didn't have too much of the power to get him his opponent out. Talk about that more later, probably. And in a pretty exciting fight before, it was stopped early because of a cut over the eye of Javier Garcia. Javier Garcia and Jose Ramon fought to a technical draw. Both men went down. It was another fight that was just balls to the wall, punches galore, and We'll talk about more about that later. I know that David Shin has a lot to talk about that, and we'll get on that in a little bit. That was in the lightweight division. Super bantamweight, Vic Cacilius defeated Jasma Hogue by in the four-round unanimous decision. Trevor McCombie in the light heavyweight. He's been on our show before out of Chicago. Man, he defeated Alicia Durazo in the first-round knockout in another great fight for him. He moves his record to 7 wins, no losses, and all 7 by a knockout. Granted, he's not fighting world beaters yet, and who would at the 7th fight of his career, but he's finishing them off in tremendous fashion. Excited to see what T-Rev, as they call him, goes on for the rest of his career in his young career. Only 19 years old, if I'm not mistaken. Super featherweight Saul Rodriguez and Cesar Garcia. Garcia fought to a technical draw. It got stopped early as well. Super middleweight Ronald Ellis defeated Cottrell Strauss by unanimous decision in a four-round fight. Ronald Ellis moves his record to 4-0 with 3 knockouts. Excuse me. In the Echo Arena in Liverpool, United Kingdom, David Price, Olympian heavyweight, defeated fellow Olympian Ali Harrison by first-round TKO. David Price just looked good from the get-go in that fight. It was a quick fight. I think it was like 84 seconds or something. Ali Harrison, they had no chance. David Price continues his record to 14-0 with 12 KOs. And that was for the, here, wait for it, the BBBC, British Heavyweight title, the Commonwealth British Empire Heavyweight title. Also on that card, Kevin Satchel moves his record to 9-0, defeating Chris Edwards by 6-round TKO on a schedule of 12 rounds. Over in Bluewater, United Kingdom, super middleweight James McGale defeated, excuse me for messing up this name, Hadia Mohammadi, a unanimous decision in a 12-round fight. That was for the EBU, the European super middleweight title. James McGale continues his beating right now, looking good, moving his record to 13 wins, 1 loss. Lenny Dawes is on that card. He defeated Bill V.A. Pistonen by unanimous decision. That was in the light welterweight. That was also for the vacant European Union light welterweight title. And Chris Eubanks Jr. went on to continue his undefeated record to 7-0, winning odds by decision against Rosalind Pohosi Eves. I'm sorry, you guys all know that I'm horrible at these European names at times, so please excuse me. Over in Puerto Rico on Saturday as well, lightweight Jeffrey Fontanes continued his unbeaten streak to 9-0, now with 8 KOs, defeating John Nader by a TKO in the fourth round. Royal Santos defeated John Alberto Molina by second-round TKO. And super bantamweight Miguel Rafael Tapia defeated Jose Ruiz by unanimous decision. And, man, like I said, it was a busy weekend. Over in Mexico, in Mexico City, super featherweight Dante Jordan defeated Miguel Roman by unanimous decision for the vacant WBO Continental America's super featherweight title. And then also on that card, where it was a pretty popular card, a lot of people were talking about this in the women's division, Ava Knight defeated Mariana LaBarbie Juarez by unanimous decision in a 10-round fight. Ava Knight won it pretty easily. Mariana had to come up away, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and Ava Knight looked great, and she continues to make a name for herself in the women's division. And I thought it was only fitting to bring that up since last week we had a women boxer and brother and sister on last week. So it was a great weekend of fights this weekend. And, man, I'm just tired of like going over this boxing list. And like I said, we're going to have to talk about these fights on the top card. David Chan, man, let's talk about first and foremost the fight that everyone's still talking about that rocked the world last night. Brandon Bam Bam Rios, Mike Alvarado. What did you think about that fight last night? Did it live up to its expectations?
I think it did. Boxing these days with fights like these, we had that scare with DeMarco and Molina, right? Every time a fight like that, just that hype goes down, in this way, we seem to feel that the sport is cursed, right? That we shouldn't hype up fights anymore, right? When you make a dream matchup on paper, it's not going to translate into the ring. And thankfully, that wasn't the case last night. We got, everything lined up perfectly, and then we got exactly what we wanted. Now, I'm the type of guy that doesn't like to see fighters really get hurt in the ring, but even I can't deny the entertainment quality from something like that. You know, that's one of those performances that everybody's going to talk about, that both guys are going to walk away feeling like winners, even though somebody's all had to go.
Right, right. Yeah, that was an exciting matchup. I mean, look, I was joking around with people on via Twitter, Facebook, text, whatever it was, saying, imagine this fight was boring. Like, it did not live up to the expectations. Like you mentioned, DeMarco Molina, you know. But, man, it was a classic fight in the making. My question is, do you feel that it was stopped prematurely?
This is, see, I'm of the opinion, right? This is just my opinion. Nobody needs to hang me for this. But I like having a standing A count, right? It was created to protect fighters, and it was created to buy some time for fighters who are hurt, for referees and officials around the ringside to make good judgment during the heat of the action. You know, take a few seconds and check the fighter out. And it hurts no one to take a standing A count for a fighter when you see them in trouble like that. A referee can jump in. You don't have to stop the fight right away just because someone, you know, got hit by a good shot, right? I'm of the opinion that if you're in a sport to fight, to win, to try to knock people down, to hurt each other, to impose strength, you know, it's a combat sport. You got to give people the chance to compete, right? It's not a sport where somebody draws first blood and the first guy that gets in trouble is out of there. It's not the case. But on the same hand, how do we protect guys? And as a referee, how do you, you know, not have that on your conscience? You never want a fighter to get hurt under your watch. So I'm of the opinion that referees should use the standing A count. Now, I wasn't clear whether or not the standing A count was in the rules for this fight. Do you remember?
I don't think there was a standing A count rule.
Right.
In this fight.
Right. So if they don't have one, then Pat Russell did absolutely the right thing because, you know, I I've talked to some fighters from the Baltimore area about this. Everybody was on their social networking talking about this as it went on. And right after it happened, I asked people, what do you think of the stoppage? And a lot of the local fighters from where I'm from that I'm hooked up with on my social networking said it was a good stoppage. They said the referee has the best eye on the action. He is the one who can clearly see the fighter's condition. And if he calls it, then that's the right move.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Max Kellerman, first and foremost, kind of exaggerated on it, made it seem, you know, that it was, he made it seem like it was a horrible stoppage. And I wouldn't say it was horrible. I agree with you. The standing A count rule, is that would have been perfect because that would have not only saved the fight from being stopped early, but maybe prolonged a classic fight, you know, and we could have seen more crazy toe-to-toe action. But that's just me being selfish and wanting to see more of the beating that they're both putting on each other. But
well, here's the thing. I'll just add one more thing. I think Max Kellerman talked to Pat Russell after it was over, right?
Right.
He had sort of his perspective on things, played it back for him. And Pat Russell told him, and I like this, he said, I gave him like 6 chances, but he got hit 6 more times, which you can clearly see when you're watching the fight. Yeah, he had his hands up and he was sort of standing up, but just because you have your hands up doesn't mean you're protecting yourself. Just because you have your hands up and you're
right,
standing there doesn't mean you're not hurt. He had his hands up. He was standing up, but he was still getting hit. That's the point, right? And when you're in the heat of the moment like that, when you can already tell that Mike Alvarado could be hurt by Brandon Rios, and you're going to let him get hit by punches like that, you have to jump in. And if you jump in without a standing A count, then you stop the fight, right? Like, there was no other way for Pat Russell to handle that situation.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what? That was much respect to Pat Russell because we see a lot of refs that don't have the courage usually to do a post-fight interview, and he did, and he said the right thing. I agree with him. I like the little analogy he said. I try to take him into deep waters, but I don't want to let the make the fighter drown, you know, and that was a good point. He did his best to try to let the fight go on, And like you said, he had his hands up, but that doesn't mean he's defending himself. He was clearly getting shot. I think after that one overhand right that just landed flush, you see Alvarado's eyes kind of roll back, too. He was out, literally out on his feet, and I think it was a pretty good stoppage. Now, do I think Alvarado probably could have continued? Yeah, maybe. But is this more or less Alvarado's fault for being a hardcore warrior and not wanting to take a knee? maybe taking a knee in that fight would have been best for him and serve him the chance to get up and reestablish himself, get his, you know, his head back on his shoulders right, be get under his feet under him more. Who knows? But regardless, those two guys are warriors. I mean, I don't even know. I'm still kind of speechless about the fight. Like, my voice is gone from yelling at the TV, going back and forth. You know, it was just insane. How about a rematch? Would you want to see a rematch between those two?
I would, but let me ask you this. The fight we knew was most likely going to be a good one, right? Of course, anything can happen in boxing. One guy can come into the ring weight drained. One guy can have an injury early in the fight. But it turned out to be what we expected. But did it unfold the way you expected? Did you expect Brandon Rios to win and win that way?
I expected everything that happened except reversal. I expected it to be Alvarado coming out with a victory, simple like that, breaking down Rios and seeing Rios get tired. I did not think Rios would be able to stand the distance with a natural 140-pounder because I've never seen Rios at 140 pounds. We've seen a drained Rios the last few fights. We haven't seen Rios to his full potential in, what, three fights now or so? This time he was healthy. He was at a healthy 140. He looked great. It shocked me though with Alvarado. Like I really thought he was coming on. He looked good. And it just seemed that he maybe got, I don't want to say overconfident, but his defense, his lack of defense, I guess, showed where he started getting connected with that overhand right, and it kind of shocked me that it happened like that. And I just shows that Rios might be really, 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 really strong at 140 himself. Although, like you said, it might take a little longer, and he's still got the power.
So you would agree that Mike Alvarado, along with the rest of us, was definitely one of the ones being surprised at how the fight was going, because I'm pretty sure everybody, including Mike Alvarado himself, went into this fight thinking that he was going to be the bigger, stronger guy. But when it turned out to not be quite the case in the ring, I think he really had a hard time adjusting. You can really see that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what I've noticed a few times, and they asked both fighters this, if they both got hurt, and you can kind of see it in the demeanors in the post-fight interview. Bam Bam said, and I'll keep it clean, PG-13, he's like, no, I was hurt, but I'm not going to show it. You know, he basically said, if I show it, that means the other fighter knows that he's got me, and I'm not going to let him, you know? Where Alvarado kind of said, like, yeah, I was hurt at certain times. He didn't say I wasn't trying to show it. He did say, I think he mentioned, oh, yeah, I'm a warrior, you know, which he is. But you could see when Alvarado was getting hit solid, he backed up and he got hurt. You can see when Rios got hit solid, he came forward and wanted more, and he smiled. And, man, Rios is scary. That's the guy that tastes his own blood. You know what I mean? Like, he'll bleed, lick his hand after that just to make sure he's bleeding, you know?
Well, before the fight, a lot of people picked Mike Alvarado to win because, one, they figured he was the natural 140-pounder. Two, he's got good conditioning when Brandon Rios has shown questionable conditioning in the lightweight division. This is all fact before the fight, you know, and it's factored into a lot of people's predictions. But then in the ring, here's what I'll ask you. A lot of people seem to have this belief, I suppose you can call it, that Brandon Rios doesn't have any defense. What do you think about that?
I was talking to a few people about this before the fight, and a few of us agreed on that. He might not have the typical defense of the slip and slide and block, you know, with his hands. He has good head movement, though. And they pointed that out in the fight, and that's what he does good in the inside. I think that's what makes him a very effective inside fighter. Besides his strength, he avoids a lot of punches by moving side to side with his head. He's not stationary.
Right. I mean, obviously, he has to be doing something right because he did beat Mike Alvarado fairly convincingly, right? Every single time, like every round, it looks like he was getting the better of Mike Alvarado slowly but surely and eventually hurt him more. So he's got to be doing something. He's not just winning because he has a good chin, which he does, even though he admitted that, yeah, you know, sometimes I'm hurt, but I can pretend like I'm not. The fact that he can say that means that he's actually pretty tough, because other people, when they get hurt, they don't have a choice whether they want to show it or not. They're on the ground, right? So we know he's tough, and we know he's got heavy punches. But that's not enough for you to get through a fight. He's obviously using it in a certain way. You know, I see a lot of people saying, and this is why I brought it up, I see a lot of people saying Brandon Rios doesn't have defense. Well, it's one thing to be cute in the ring, to just flip everything, to be Pernell Whitaker, but not everybody can do that. Most fighters can't avoid being hit in the sport. That's just how it goes. So I think Brandon Rios is one of those guys who knows exactly what he's good at and not good at, and he just min and maxes it to the point where he makes it work for him regardless. Like, he knows exactly what he isn't, so he doesn't try to do it. What he tries to do is cover up, move his head as much as he can, pick up the shots whenever he could. And one thing I really like that he does, this is very rare, and this really helped him win the fight, which is every time he would get hit, he would counterpunch the other guy for trying to follow up. Do you remember when he would turn around? Like, I think it was the round before the knockout when Mike Alvarado caught him, and then he backed up for like half a second. And Mike walked forward, and Brandon hit him with a good shot. You know, it's things like that that really makes a difference, and not every fighter can do that. The fact that he can pick up the shots whenever he could, the fact that he's got a chin to back it up, and the fact that he lets his hands go and really hurt you for these things, even though he doesn't have perfect defense, he is doing defensive things in there to make sure he's always coming out ahead. It's a numbers game with Brandon.
Right, and we saw that too, and he makes every punch count. I mean, as you saw, you know, Alvarado threw a lot more punches, but not a lot of them land. And I think those numbers kind of tell a little bit of a lie, because a lot of the punches that he did miss were little flicking action jabs that he was doing, nothing with much power, more measurement punches, you know. But with Rios, he knows that he's got to conserve energy, because he knows that his strength is in his knockout power, and he throws every punch with meaning and almost – kind of waits till he knows that it's perfect timing to throw punches. You know what I mean?
He's also surprisingly accurate. I mean, people paint him as this sort of mindless brawler, and he paints himself this way. He's just saying, I could go on the attack. But he's actually very intelligent. He does things for a reason there. He is somewhat of a technician, even though he is kind of hidden by the fact that he is an inside fighter. He's an aggressive fighter. It looks like he's sort of just forcing his way in. But the fact that he's able to throw that overhand right, which is not an easy punch to connect, if you've ever been, you know, in the gym, the fact that he can throw that with accuracy and made it work, that's not random. That's not a lucky punch. Like, he is figuring Mike Alvarado out in the ring as the fight goes, and it worked. You know, he not everybody can steadily and consistently chop and like opponents down the way Brandon Rios does. The guy actually has a lot of technique in what he does.
Yeah, and I noticed that too. And that's when I started noticing, after, you know, he landed that overhand right, it's like, Oh no, he timed it. He found something. You know, you could see it. You almost could see, like, oh crap, we know what's going to happen next, almost. Because he found the perfect timing for that overhand right. And like you said, and that's not a lucky punch. That's just knowing your opponent and knowing when he's going to throw that punch and drop his guard so he can come over the top of that right hand. And that was just, it was picture perfect almost.
Right. Now, we were talking about rematches earlier, so let's get back to that real quick. After saying all this, that the fact that Brandon Rios showed that he is a strong 140-pound fighter, do you think if they were to make a rematch, Mike Alvarado can change some things around? Do you think it's possible to have a different outcome in a potential rematch?
I think he could. I think it's very possible that Alvarado has a chance to get in the arena. He does have to work on things. I think he didn't listen to his corner fully. He wasn't getting out. He kept on trying to fight or use his defense, kind of like a shoulder roll technique at times. I think in the first round, after the first round, his trainer said, enough with that crap. That crap's not working. That shit's not working. And it wasn't, apparently. I think if he maybe does, we've seen he can box a little bit, you know. Maybe that might be a little bit better, using that jab, keeping Rios at a distance, and, you know, at the end of his punches, that might work a lot better. But I definitely think it's going to be a hard uphill battle for Alvarado to make changes to fight against Rios in a rematch.
You know, I just want to give, you know, some credit to Brandon Rios, because a lot of times when you see fighters come up in weight, things like that, you basically have this idea of what to expect. Right. But Brandon Rios surprises people. Now, he's not a perfect fighter or anything, and I don't even consider him an undefeated fighter because there was that whole questionable decision with Richard Arbrill. But still, it's nice to see someone pleasantly surprise the boxing world, you know what I mean? Come up in weight and then actually doing really well. So that's a nice little story. That was a good fight for boxing. And, you know, give the kid some credit. He's not as one-dimensional as people seem. And he's definitely good for the sport. I mean, other than the Richard Arbrill fight, I mean, how many fights have you seen him on TV that you can really complain about? Unless you just don't like his attitude, which is understandable. I mean, that's to each his own, you know.
Yeah, I love the attitude, man. It reminds me of American Me or some kind of like hardcore gangster flick, you know. He's a funny guy. I like him. You know, I never was too upset about him not making weight. I always felt kind of bad for him because it seemed like, although it was it's ultimately his choice, I'm sure he listened to a lot of people on why to stay at 135. But he tried. It's not like he was being an overshaped 135. He even said it. He was training to lose weight, you know? It's not like Adrian Broner when you're coming in like, oh, I don't care, you know?
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
You know, so I like Rios. He's so exciting to watch. I'm curious to see what they do next with him, though. Like, they're really grooming him to be that next guy at top rank. You can see that. And rightfully so. He's very exciting. He's very fun to watch. He's a huge draw. I mean, I'm telling you, I've seen people's tweets, and I agree with them. This is the type of fight I'm willing to pay $45, $49.99, whatever the case may be, for it, if it was pay-per-view. Like, that is a pay-per-view headlining fight, and he deserves every bit of it, you know. But obviously this was on HBO, which is not free by any means, even though a lot of people like to say it is. We all pay a subscription fee, but that was well worth it. That was well worth it. It was a hell of a fight, and it made up for the lackluster main event.
I mean, what can you really say about that? I got a few things we can say. I mean, do you want to move on to the main event, or do you have any final thoughts for Rios versus Alvarado? Because I'm sure everybody's going to be talking about this for quite some time.
Well, real quick, before we go on to the main event real quick, what do you think is next for Rios? Do you think they're going to really try to push him into the winner of Pacquiao Marquez?
No, because there's whoever wins that fight is not going to be going out of their way to fight someone like Brandon Rios.
Exactly.
Marquez certainly wouldn't be. And they're both enough of a star for them to just flat out refuse Brandon Rios, you know? Rios, he's just not at that point. I mean, one of the things I like about him is the fact that he does fight a lot of people. He fights pretty often. He's not a superstar. And he's actually one of those consistent guys that I like in the sport. You know, we don't live or die based on super fights. And then, you know, this fight just goes to prove that. It's a 10-rounder. It wasn't for any silly world title, anything fancy like that. It was for something irrelevant. But the fight itself was important. You know what I mean? The fight itself is very important for the sport. And guys like Brandon Rios who consistently come in and give us like a breath of fresh air, these are the important guys. So, I mean, a lot of people seem to think that because of his promoter, we won't be able to see him with a lot of in there with a lot of fighters that we would want to see him with. But I can't really say for sure. I mean, is it really fair to want to see him in there in a slugfest every time? I mean, does Rios deserve a rest, or do we just like him so much that he's got to do this every single time?
I almost think that he doesn't want a rest, though. Like, it to me, it's scary that he likes to get hit that much. He laughs about it. Like, I'm telling you, that's like a mindset of a serial killer right there. Like, the guy that likes to be in pain.
You know what's interesting? He's surprisingly, like, his fights are surprisingly clean considering the way he fights. You know what I mean? Like, there was one of the things I was afraid about when it came to this fight was something silly was going to happen in the first few rounds for it to be over prematurely, right? A headbutt here or something like that. Somebody gets cut and then it just stops and then everybody goes home mad. But there's actually very little of that in Brandon Rios' fights. They're always action-packed, but they're always fairly clean. If a foul goes on, it's most likely from his opponent, not from him.
Yeah, and that's true. you would think because of how the close quarter fighting style that he has, you know, a headbutt definitely going to happen. But you don't really see that too often with him. And I that's a great thing, especially for fans, you know. We don't have to worry about, like you said, an early stoppage or the fight going to cards or like we saw. But we're going to talk about later, the Garcia fight that ended in a technical draw. You know, like stuff like that, you think you see that more with Bam Bam. And one thing I forgot, no one talked about this. Bam Bam was not only did he the first fight at 140, he's coming off an injury. He was supposed to fight Mauricio Herrera first and pulled out because of an elbow injury. And to see him continue to fight the way he did off of an injury, that's another thing that you got to give credit to Bam Bam for.
Right. I mean, I do like that about him is he never makes excuses, and there's no BS when it comes to Ben and Rios. He just goes in there. He does his best. He doesn't make up any excuses, whether he does well or doesn't do well, right? He just says, look, man, I'm in the ring. I'll just do my best. You know, it's that sincerity that really comes through. You can really tell. And it's not just empty words because the guy shows his qualities in the ring. He's always fighting hard, no matter who he's in there with. He always tries to make weight. I'll ask you this, though. Does this performance vindicate his previous victims somewhat? Guys in the lightweight division, guys who got knocked out like Anthony Peterson, like, does this make them look a little bit better?
As far as with, like, as them being solid opponents?
I mean, like, you know, Brandon was knocking out a lot of guys in the lightweight division, but now, in retrospect, can we let those guys off a little bit easier now that he went up to 140 and show that he's even strong for that division? You see what I mean?
Yeah, I think you can. You know, I always go back and talk about the Urban Attilion fight. I always thought that was a hell of a fight. Brandon got hit with a little shot in that fight, and we all saw what happened. And Attilion isn't a pushover as far, you know, in any form as a fighter. So I definitely think that this is kind of been the case for the other guys. This was a hell of a fight. I was surprised that his power came over to the 140 division, and as you see, it did. And he's a tough SOB.
Who do you want to see him against? So who do you think can beat him at 140? There's a lot of guys at 140.
You know what fight I would love to see, but, you know, because of the promoters and all that, you know, I don't even want to talk about that because tired of that.
I already know what you're going to say, but say it anyway.
Matisse?
Yep. that's what everybody would say. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that fight's not getting made.
It's just hard. You know, this whole Cold War crap that pisses me off. Because there's so many fighters in both promotions that they should both be fighting. I'm trying to think who's like top ranked. He can fight in top rank right now, offhand. Who's in the 140 division? Who's the other chance there?
Yeah, but who's going to want to fight him that he would want to fight?
Well,
you know what I mean?
I don't think anyone. I think other than Matisse, I think Matisse would want to fight him, but nobody else.
Right. Like every single person that Brandon Rios would want to fight would not want to fight him in return, so he's not going to get anything made.
Yeah, that's what it's like the What's the word I'm looking for? It's like a double-edged sword, you know. It's a gift and a curse. You're exciting. You're talented. You're powerful, but you scare them off, you know. You don't get any bang for your buck if you're the champion and you got to take on a guy like Brandon Rios, you know. Is it worth fighting for the maybe not that much amount of money and the high risk? You know, high risk, low reward.
Maybe just the rematch, honestly.
As far as you see them?
As far as Brandon Rios and Mike Alvarado, maybe just the rematch.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a good thing. I think it makes good money. I think it makes for another possibility of a classic-type trilogy fight.
How do you feel about Mauricio Herrera, the fact that, like, that they were going to originally fight? Do you think that's still a fight that would interest someone, yourself?
Well, I would be interested in it because Herrera is the type to pull off upsets. Obviously, Herrera's going to get past Kareem Mayfield coming up. I think that's going to be an exciting, a hell of a fight, too. And that's another thing, too. Whoever wins that fight, maybe fights Rios. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to get at is should the fact that Brandon Rios just had a sensational performance, does that mean he needs to be a superstar and look for a superstar fight? I don't personally think so. Now, don't get me wrong. I want fighters to be rewarded. I want them to get their opportunities to shine, to make their big money, to fight the big fights too. But I feel like we really have to get away from this whole, oh, I had one good fight where I have one highlight reel knockout, so now I can demand to be on a pay-per-view. I don't think that's good for the sport. I don't think that's the way it should be. I think the best thing Brandon Rios can do is keep beating more and more people. And the winner of Herrera and Mayfield, that's a good one. Or you know, at least get Mike Alvarado back in the mix. Something. There's a bunch of guys in there, as long as they stay out of the Pacquiao Mayweather sweepstakes, that kind of stuff, that can make a lot of good fights. They don't need those super fights in order to make money or to get fans.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. I think they need to – obviously, they always go to and refer to Pacquiao Mayweather because, obviously, that's where the big bucks are at. But you know what? You brought up a good point. After one fight, should he be, like, looking for superstars? I don't think so yet. Because, yeah, he looked great in this fight, but Styles makes fights. And he fought a guy who likes to brawl, too. You know, he suckered – Alvarado, even though Alvarado said he's going to try to outbox him more, and he did try to do that at times, but he fell into that brawling mode. How about can Brandon beat a 140 pounder who can outbox him and who's quicker, like maybe a Mayfield, or like Herrera who can move around a little bit and who's upset of guys like Grozin provoking off at 140. So that would be interesting to test his skills even more on a different type of fighter at 140.
Well, we know Brandon can struggle, right? I mean, he won this fight partly because he was moving up in weight, and that mystery helped him, right? The fact that people underestimated his ability to transition between the weights did help him against Mike Alvarado. But now that it's no longer a mystery, people are going to be a lot more careful when it comes to fighting him. And guys like Herrera, you know, those spoiling types, the ones who are in there to make you look bad, they can definitely just stay one step ahead. And it's not like we haven't seen Brandon Rios getting tough before. You know, against Richard Arbril, a lot of people call that a bad decision. I'm one of them. So it's not like the blueprint doesn't exist. The question is, does a fighter like that exist at 140?
Definitely. And also, can Brandon Rios make adjustments, in-ring adjustments, unlike he did against Arbril? And that's one thing to be a superstar you're going to have to do. And that's something that I would want to see, especially out of Rios, before he moves on to the big superstars at the division or move up to 147. I found that odd that he's already talking about 147.
Yeah. Oh, here's another one. Remember he used to have that Twitter war with Victor Ortiz? Let's not forget about that.
Oh, bad. Wouldn't that be fun to watch?
Yeah, but that fight can't get made neither, right?
Right.
That's the same. Yeah, that's the same as Lucas Matisse. Go ahead.
Or even him and Berto. That would be another interesting one. But we don't even know where Berto is right now. We don't know if he's TNT, the money, or Mayweather, Ludabella, Golden Boy. He's with like 20 different promoting companies right now. So
we don't know
if that fight can be made.
Do we know exactly the details of his contract with Top Rank? Because, hey, maybe he can leave Top Rank and sign with Golden Boy, and then we're good.
Oh, as far as Rios?
Yep.
I don't think Rios – you see, Rios loves Bob. He wouldn't leave Bob for anything, it looks like. He loves that the Bob father there. He was giving him hugs and kisses.
I just can't quit you, Bob. I can't quit you.
Yeah, you see that? That was funny. I give it up to Bob Arum, man. For a lot of people knocking on him, you know, he put a hell of a card last night. And it's funny, I saw a funny tweet the other day, too. I got to point this out, man. And you know, everyone always has that hashtag, blame Bob. But someone said, you know, I can't blame Bob on this one. I blame De La Hoya, you know, or something like that. And I thought that was hilarious, man. Like, this was a hell of a card from top to bottom. And, man, I'm telling you, I want to watch it right after the show's done. I'm going to rewatch the fight. Like, that's how exciting it was.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Top Rank stream for the untelevised undercard, because those fights we just wouldn't have got to see. but everybody got to see that for free as long as you had a good internet connection. And that kind of stuff really makes a difference. I mean, you can say Bob Arum, you know, is a greedy guy. Sometimes he makes decisions based on business as opposed to the entertainment of the fans and so on. He said some questionable stuff in the past. The guy is not perfect. Top Rank is not perfect. But when they do put on a show, they do try to make it a good show because they recognize that profit and entertaining value does go hand in hand. You know, when they do put a card together, they're not trying to screw the fans out of their money. They do try to give us our money's worth. And you know, you got to recognize that when it happens, the whole undercard being on the live stream, every time they pack it with a good undercard fight, you know, these are all good things the Top Rank consistently does. Their own little pay-per-views are always good. So Bob Arum gets credit for those.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, since we're on the topic of the whole card and everything, let's move on real quick. We'll touch on it a little bit. I know you said you wanted to talk about it a little bit. Michioka and Donaire, what do you think about that? How did you think about that fight?
Actually, let me get you started on that because let me go out there and do some of my producer stuff, okay? Let me handle some of my producer responsibilities, and I'll be right back. So you go ahead and give your thoughts, and I'll follow up.
All right, no problem. Well, first off, you know, I was a little disappointed. I was pumping this fight up to a lot of people. I thought a lot of people weren't giving Michioka the just due and kind of almost making it seem like he was another nobody that Donaire is fighting. And to me, it wasn't at all that. Like, if you watch tapes of Michioka, look what he did to Rafael Marquez, who, yes, he wasn't the great Rafael Marquez that we're used to seeing, but he was still a solid opponent, and he outboxed him and did his thing against Marquez. Other fights, you know, he had a quick left. He was a southpaw. Donaire hasn't fought a southpaw in God knows how long. I mean, there was a lot of different factors. You got to remember, Michioka has not lost in 2004, and that's difficult by any sense. But here's the thing: he came in that fight and he disappointed me. He didn't let his hands go at all until towards the end. And granted, that is when he got hurt the most. But man, like, you got to go in there. I don't like seeing these guys go against them. They're not even. They should go there to show for a paycheck, essentially. That's what it looked like. They're so scared of Donaire, which they should be, obviously, because Donaire is vicious, and he just proved it. And it was just that uppercut was beautiful. He timed it perfectly when he bent over, you know, from the waist, and he timed it. It looked great. Donaire looks great. I want to see Donaire. I would love to see Donaire and Abner Mattes or Moreno fight. You know, once again, that's not going to happen. But, I really just want to see him fight against someone who's not afraid of him.
You know how when they were commentating this fight, they were saying things like, oh, it's good that Donaire wants to be a boxer now. He's going back to his boxing roots. But am I wrong in that? I don't really agree with that. I mean, Donaire made his name by knocking guys out. He wasn't just another athletic kid who could box, who had good footwork, who had good hand speed. He had the power and the weight and the timing to use it. That's why people are afraid of him. But now, don't you feel he's fighting a little bit too safe? I mean, it's not like he's an Americano. He can't take a good shot. You know what I mean? It's not like he's an athletic guy who has to stay safe. Donaire is a big, strong kid, and he's in there with somebody who is throwing single-digit punches per round, but he never really asserted himself, not like Trevor McCombie did when he was up against somebody who was outgunned on the undercard. We'll talk more about that. Will I make that comparison? But don't you think Donaire, in a way, is fighting a little bit too careful, that's the wrong direction?
You know, not in this fight. I don't. I think he was up to with a guy who was playing too safe. It's like, I think Donaire was kind of like, God, what do I do? This guy has his right hand, and I'm going to use the words that everyone was using, glued to his ear. You know, he's not going to let me shoot that left hook, so I'm going to find something else. And which he did. He started using the right, and he started breaking him down slowly but surely and forcing him to open up. Now, I agree with that sense. I agree with what you're saying against maybe the other fighters, like Matabula and Navarez. You know, like guys like that, yeah, I think he was playing too safe. This fight, it was like, I think he went in the fight, he respected Michioka. He thought Michioka was going to come in there and fight and be the champion that Michioka is. And instead, he got a Michioka who only threw seven punches in the first round.
Yeah. And another thing I want to mention is that it seems like, it's like what you said earlier, a lot of people are unfamiliar with Nishioka, maybe underestimated him. I mean, he did get stopped in this fight, you know, it did go according to everybody's predictions. But some of the things, for example, that the commentators were saying, how, you know, oh, he's gluing his right hand to his face because he's afraid of Donaire's power. If you've ever seen Nishioka before, he does that in every fight. It's nothing new to him. You know what I mean? The fact that, I mean, Donaire shouldn't even need to make the adjustment in the ring saying, oh, I can't land a left hook, let me use a right hand. Because in all Nishioka's tapes, he does that. If you've ever seen one of his fights, you've seen them all. He always leaves that hand up there. That's just a habit he has as a southpaw. So Donaire should have went right to the right hand. But, I mean, I'm just sort of, you know, nitpicking here about his performance. But that's just what I see, and I think a lot of people agree with me, is he is way too patient sometimes when he doesn't really need to be. And if he wants to make a statement, he's going to have to really start applying his gifts rather than just kind of waiting for it to happen. He even said it himself. He's like, I'd rather let that knockout come. It's like, no, no, Nito, you know, make it happen sometimes. It's not going to be bad for you.
Right, right. Now, real quick, before we talk, I want to still talk about this. But
now, Josh, before you do all this, we got Ron from Punches and Bunches with us. He's calling in. So should we get him on the air and then chop it up with us?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to give a little plug for our shows on Leave It in the Ring real quick, and we'll bring him on. How about that?
Definitely.
All right. So real quick, everyone, you know, this is not the only show. LeaveItInTheRingRadio.com hosts. We also have on Mondays for all the Mexican listeners and speakers out there. You got Noche de Boxeo. That's Monday night. That's 5 Pacific. It's a great show for all you Mexican and Latino speakers, Spanish speakers out there. Excuse my name. And Thursdays, we have Leave It in the Ring Radio with your host, Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya. That's 3 hours of boxing talk at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 Eastern. Make sure you check that show out. And don't forget, Undisputed Fight Magazine. You can get your magazine and every monthly subscription at UndisputedFightMag.com. All you boxing addicts, boxing heads out there, you got to get it. If you don't got it, you're not a true boxing fan. Now, we got, and also for all the callers out there, we got Ron coming up. But right now, if any other callers want to call in, 347-215-7598. Give us a call. Chop it up. Talk boxing. So we got Ron. Ron, are you on?
Ron, you there, buddy?
Yeah, hold on 1 second.
No problem.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. It's a little staticky or echoey over there, but I can hear you.
Okay, I'm on my way back to Phoenix, actually. I'm on the highway.
Yeah, now it's a little staticky. I can't hear you too well now.
Okay.
Yeah, you're just cutting out a little bit over there, Ron.
Yeah, I'm both because I'm driving on the highway. Okay. I'm going to try calling back.
All right, no problem, Ron.
No problem, Ron. Just call us when you're ready, and then we'll throw you right back on, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right.
All right, but as I was saying with the media fight, though, I can see what everyone's saying at that, and it's funny. I'm one guy who actually thought Danielle was going to get a decision out of this. It was more so I respect Nishioka. Now, like you were saying, if you watch his videos, you see him, he holds that right hand high all the time, it's glued to his head. But if you watch him, though, he usually throws punches, though. I mean, he just seemed like he didn't want to engage.
I think, he is a counterpuncher, right? If you watch his fights, he does bet against guys who have a steady rhythm, who just steady come forward, throws a lot of punches. That way, he's easier to time. I mean, ask any counterpuncher, they'll pretty much tell you that's the easiest way to time someone. But Donaire is one of those guys that's really hard to time. I mean, you're talking about one of the fastest fighters, you know, at that weight class, not to mention he's got good punching power, right? So as a counterpuncher, you're going to let Donaire get off and then try to hit him for it. You know, that's a really tricky thing. And I think Nishioka was looking for it, and it's just a bad style matchup because as long as Donaire is being patient, there is not much Nishioka could do. Right, and even if they do trade punches, Nishioka is going to come out on the worst end of it because surprisingly, Donaire happens to be a bigger guy in the ring. I mean, who knew? This guy's been coming up in weight for a while now, but he's a pretty big kid. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And now, my question for you is this: do you think we can make him and Mahrez happened, him and Moreno happened, or even, well, obviously, I think he answered this question last night, him and Rivendell happened.
You can do it. I don't think people will want to see him and Rivendell, right? Rivendell is a good fighter, but, I mean, he is who he is, you know what I mean? Like, you can just see the fight in your mind. Right? They both have power. They're both quick. They both are patient. They like to wait for the other guy. So what's going to happen when you put him in the ring? It's going to be a worse version of what we saw last night. Now, if you can put him in with Abner Mahrez, I think that is the best fight in my mind. Right? That would be pretty good. And can it be made? Sure. I don't see why not. Maybe unless Donaire just doesn't want to. You see what I mean? I mean, it's all about where he's at.
Well, they are different promoters. You got Top Rank and Golden Boy once again. You think they could put their differences aside for this fight?
If Mahrez wins real big, I mean, this is all guessing, you know what I mean? The Cold War is silly because we have to talk about this every single time. I can't just think about boxing the way it should be, you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
But maybe if Mahrez become a superstar and Donaire is already a superstar, you know, maybe then, but you know,
yeah,
anything is possible. And,
yeah.
And whereas in this case, anything is not possible.
Exactly. And you know, first of all, Mahrez still got to get past Moreno, and I like Mahrez. And I like Mahrez a lot. He's a very talented young kid who gets better and better each time, and he's someone who goes after the win and not let it come to him, kind of like what you want to see almost from Donaire, because Donaire is more of a natural athlete.
Let me ask you this, though. This puts you on the spot a little bit. You know, this is real talk. This is a real question. Do you like watching Donaire fight? I want you to answer that honestly.
Yeah, I'll answer totally honestly. Yes and no. Lately, not really. I'm a fan of seeing, like, you know, the Roy Jones type, you know, hands down, you know, showing off, which Donaire tends to do at times. I like when he does that because usually his fight's boring before he does that anyways. But I think it's not just him, though. It's also the opponents he's fighting that haven't intrigued me.
Do you think it's all on his opponents? Because they said this on the HBO telecast, the commentators said this, that the opponents are so wary of his power that they're refusing to engage with him, and that's what's making the fight bad. But when you got the size advantage and you're the faster fighter, you got the footwork, you got the hand speed, couldn't you try to put it on the other guy a little bit? That's all I'm saying, right? Because the way Donaire fights is he'll try a combination, right? And if the other guy backs up, that's it. There's no follow-up. Donaire would just go, well, it didn't work. Let me try it again. You see what I mean? It's very sporadic.
I think the last two fights, Matabula and Narvaez, he could have done that. He could have pressed the fight more and made it happen. Even against Wilfredo Vasquez, too. I keep leaving him out. See, that fight, although he showed everyone that, oh, my hands were bleeding or whatever, you know, I think he could have done it then. You know, but he didn't. He does lack a killer instinct of late. I would love to see that from him.
What do you think of the fact that he's doing all this other stuff, too, besides boxing? You know, he's got that movie he's making. He's got all this other stuff going on. What do you think about that?
I don't want to ever see his movie, first and foremost. It's like, you know what? I'm one person who has watched Wolf Pac-Man, Manny Pacquiao's movie. I watched it because a lot of people who know, I have a lot of Filipino friends, and I was forced to watch that. And after seeing that, I never want to see Donaire's movie ever. It looked horrible. And he should quit acting and concentrate on boxing. If he could go after his goal in boxing by knocking out people like he can go after his goal of being an actor, he would be more entertaining.
I mean, he's been pound for pound for so long, whatever that means for a lot of people, right? You know, he is a superstar based on his talent alone, you know what I mean? And his good knockouts. It would be nice to see him do some more stuff like that. I mean, is it a little bit unfair that people put him on these mythical pound for pound lists and then expect him to have a spectacular knockout every time? Yeah, it's unfair to be in a spotlight like that. But at the same time, you can't help but wonder, hey, you know, maybe this guy can use what he's got just a little bit better. And not to mention, isn't he saying he's got hand trouble again after this fight? He hurt his left hand, something like that?
He said his left hand was hurt, and that's another big concern. He's been having bad hands for the last few fights. He's been cramping up. If you saw him earlier in that fight, I don't know, I think they did clash knees, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but he was shaking his leg because his leg was bothering him. His body is breaking down, and I wonder if that's a sign of him being such a, you know, such an athlete in the ring, you know. Like, you see, let's use basketball, for example. You see a lot of guys who are great slam dunkers, like Vince Carter, guys like that end up having bad knees. They get jumpers' knees, tendonitis in their knees. I wonder if the way he moves, the awkward movements, the different angles, the way he stops, and he almost kind of like a running back at times when he moves his ankle, you know. And I wonder if that's bad on him, bad on his body.
I mean, boxing is a tough sport. It sort of goes without saying that, you know, any fighter is going to be putting good mileage on themselves. You know, all fighters are essentially burning it at both ends, right? So, I mean, especially for somebody like Donaire who uses his body in such an explosive way, you really don't know what it's doing to himself. I mean, all this stuff is speculation. He still did get the job done. But let me ask you this, and we got Ron back on, so let's throw him up there too. Let's throw him in the mix. But let me just ask you this real quick. If he didn't stop Nishioka, if Nishioka went the way of Narvaez, do you think Donaire would be in trouble in the eyes of the boxing world?
I think that people, if he went the way of Narvaez, he would be in trouble. If Nishioka came out and gave him just a hard fight, then I think a lot of people could have respected that maybe. But if it was just a boring fight, let him, you know, hey, let's just fight to the decision, I think it's trouble for Donaire.
We got Ron back on the line. Let's throw Ron on the air and see what he has to say. Ron, are you there, man?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me better now?
Yep, you sound good.
All right. Hey, I'm on my way back to Phoenix. I'm in Ajo, Arizona, about 50 miles or so out of Phoenix.
Yeah, so Rod, how was the atmosphere last night? You traveled all the way from Phoenix to the fight. How was it?
It was excellent. It was a really good crowd, really excited crowd. It was a really good card, I thought. And, you know, I think, the fight of the night for me was Rios Alvarado, but the Benavidez fight was one that really kind of shocked me, but at the same time, watching Jose getting lit up in that last and final round, you know, he was hanging on for sure, but he held out. He just took a really hard shot to the head and really just held on and got through to the win.
You know, we haven't talked about that yet. And since I have you on right now, I want to talk about that. You know, Benavidez dominated 7 rounds, and then, you know, we saw what happened. He got hurt. He hurt really bad, and he went to survivor mode. And for a young kid, I was very surprised he was able to be in survivor mode and not get knocked out. He was holding on. He was being smart in a smart boxing way. But do you think that shot, A, do you think it was more, it might wake him up as far as, you know, because to me in that fight, he looked very lackadaisical in the fight. He looked like he kind of took the fight easy. I think he could have finished this guy off, you know, but do you think that it's kind of woke him up? And B, do you think this kind of shows that his chin might not be the strongest?
I think as far as like when he got hit, I think he fought a smart fight. He knew what to do. I mean, he knew to hang on, but he definitely didn't have any legs. And I think you're right, because I was expecting him to take him out like in rounds 4 to 6. I think he really could have. But, you know, he's always been really patient anyways, and he fights a smart fight. But you're right, he could have. I think he really could have honestly taken him out earlier if he would have went a different route. But as far as chin, you know, it's hard to say. I haven't seen the fight actually on TV yet. I just watched it live, of course. But, I mean, it was definitely a hard shot. And you could see in his eyes, he was just totally dazed and just hanging on. And you got to attribute it to his training. I mean, he knew what to do. But honestly, when I saw it happen, I thought he was actually knocked down. But according to everyone else, he wasn't.
Yeah, you know, if you once you get to watch it on TV on the link, you know, Ryan Bivens, if you go on Sweet Boxing, he has it up. Even after the fight was over, he was feeling it still. He was in his corner, and there, you know, they were putting water on his head and his mouth, and he was, like, trying to shake it off still. You could see, like you said, you could see it in his eyes. And it was scary. I was like, oh, man, this guy's hurt. You know, Jose is hurt. One thing I want to point this out to you, and you know, you've been following Jose for a long time. I've been following Jose for a fairly good amount of time. He's been on the show. He fought this guy, Pavel Miranda, and I know I hate to do comparisons, but just look, Julio Diaz, Mauricio Herrera, Ty Barnett, Danny Garcia all finished Pavel Miranda off. Do you think that this fight, maybe Benavidez didn't take it as seriously or something? Like, I really expected him to finish this guy off.
I kind of did too, but at the same time, you know, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say because I know the first round or so there is the touchy feely round and, you know, kind of figure things out. But and Miranda was like a scrapper though. I mean, he was a pretty busy fighter and he, you know, as far as like throwing hard punches and all that, this guy's got some game. He can definitely hit. But you know, it's hard to say exactly what Jose's mindset was and going into that. Honestly, when I just honestly was expecting to finish him off between rounds 4 and 6. I really think he could have done it if he would have went maybe a different route. I don't know, but you know, it's hard to say because we're not in that ring. We're not getting our asses beat. But
right.
As far as watching him, I don't know. I've always been high up on him, and I love watching this kid. I was really totally shocked to see him get rattled, but at the same time, I was glad to see him pull it off and you know, maybe learn his skills, or you know, learn how to hang on, and maybe that's just a tribute to where he's working out and all that. Yeah,
hey, guys, can we cut in real quick? Josh,
sure.
And
yeah.
Ron, we got undefeated Javier Torres with us. So should we throw him on there with you guys? Are you guys going to mix it up a little bit?
Yeah, let's get Javier on the line.
Yeah, let's get Javier on while Ron is here, and then we can all do this. Javier, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, what's going on, Javier? It's Josh, man. How's everything going?
Everything's going good, man. You know, just relaxing, getting ready for Friday night.
Great, man. And for everyone listening, this is Javier Torres. Recently signed with Thompson Boxing. He is 3-0. He's a former LA Matador of the World Series of Boxing, 24 years old, from Medford, Oregon, now out of California. What is it, Long Beach, right? Long Beach area?
Yeah, now I'm residing in Long Beach now.
Great. And this guy trains old. He's a great fighter, man. If you guys haven't get to see him, make sure you go check it out, you know, on YouTube or whatever. First and foremost, you got a fight this weekend, man. How's training going, and how excited are you? This is your Thompson Boxing debut, right?
Yeah. I had my first fight with Thompson, my last fight, and so thankfully that was
okay.
My debut. But yeah, this will be my first fight under the Thompson Promotions banner. So I feel pretty excited. You know, I feel like I have a great opportunity ahead of me, and I'm just gonna seize the moment. You know, just take advantage of everything that's been coming my way.
Definitely, man. Now, do you know who you're fighting yet on Friday?
I just know my opponent's name is Terrence Perel, and that's about it, man. But other than that, I don't know much. I mean, it doesn't matter. I put in all the work. So, I mean, everybody knows that fights are won in the gym. So I feel I've already won this fight.
All right, man. Well, for people who don't know, you know, you fought in the World Series of Boxing. You're L.A. Matador. Man, how was the experience for you, you know, coming up in the Matador system? It was, you know, it's a semi-pro with no headgear, I'm sorry. And, you know, you guys fight like pros, basically. How important was that in your experience of growing up as a fighter?
Oh, man, that really helped me a lot because, like, the way I feel about the L.A. Matadors, the whole World Series of Boxing, I think it's a great gig for me because, right there, it kind of like you get seasoned for the pros, you know. Right there is where you ask yourself, like, do I really have it in me to become a professional fighter, or do I just like the amateurs? And right there is where I found that you know, my style was more suited for the professionals anyways, you know, and I felt right at home, you know what I mean? The only difference was we didn't have a headgear. We had smaller gloves. But to me, I liked it. I liked it a lot because it helped to shape me into who I am right now, you know, and I mean, I'm just a growing progress, you know?
Right. Now, for one thing, you know, we talked about this before. You know, your second fight, you go into the fight, and they announce your record as some obscene record, like you had like 6 or 7 wins and like 15 losses, and people were saying that, you know, this fight is just strictly for entertainment. And this is all because a little bit of the World Series of Boxing, they counted that record and they weren't supposed to. Now that it's all fixed and done, how was this feeling, going, your mindset going into that fight, knowing that, you know, you're undefeated, but they're telling people that, you know, you got like 10, 12 losses on your record?
Oh, that was horrible, man. It was humiliating, you know, like I'm trying to display a good show for my friends and family and for promoters, you know, trying to put my name out there. And then the announcers, they announced me with a ridiculous record, you know, and it's kind of humiliating because it was on national television. So it kind of like, it kind of messed up my mind a little bit, like at the weigh-ins and all that. But then I put it all together and turned the negative into a positive, and I just used it as fuel and just went in the ring extremely motivated. I just said to myself, man, I really got to prove myself. I'm going to show them who I really am. And I don't know if you got a chance to see the fight or not, but, I mean, I stopped the guy in the first round, so I was just really poised to get him out of there and show my skills to the world.
Yeah, I saw the fight. It was a great knockout. Now, I might be mistaken here, but I want to make sure. On your pro debut, you fought in Santa Monica. Was it for a special event, and what was it for?
It was, I debuted on the Sugar Ray Leonard card. I believe it was a charity event for kids with autism or something like that. And that's where I made my professional debut, on the Sugar Ray Leonard card in Santa Monica at the pier.
How was that? So I'm fighting against, fighting in front of, you know, a Hall of Famer like Sugar Ray Leonard and other celebrities that probably were on hand.
It was pretty cool, man, because, I mean, like, everybody's really excited because not everybody gets to turn professional, and when they do, it's a big thing, you know, like, damn, my professional debut, my first professional fight, my first step to a world title, to something that I've looked forward to ever since I was a kid. But it's another thing when you're in front of Sugar Ray Leonard, all these celebrities, George Lopez was there, there was, like, tons of celebrities that were there, and then afterwards, they come up to you and they tell you, hey, man, that was a hell of a fight. You have a great future ahead of you. Can we take, they ask you, like, hey, man, we want to take pictures. And, I mean, that was just amazing. It was crazy, man. I really liked it.
Nice. Now, you know, one thing I wanted, did you watch the fight last night?
I actually just got a chance to watch the Alvarado versus Real. It was a tremendous fight. It was really good. It was competitive.
Now, a lot of people who don't know, you train at the Rock, where Alvarado happened to be training for this fight. You got to see him train for a bit. Were you shocked at all how the outcome turned out?
Everybody knows that was a fight that could have gone either way. You know, it was just a matter of who was going to get caught first or who was going to throw that big shot first. I won't say I was shocked because, like I said, it could have gone either way, you know, and the only thing I could say is I knew it was going to end up in a knockout. I didn't know who was going to get knocked out, but I didn't know it was going to end up in a knockout just because those are both fighters that just come forward and then they're just there to trade, you know?
Right, definitely. Ron, are you still on the line?
Yeah, still here.
Hey, Ron, do you got anything that Javier Torres on the line with us? You got anything you wanted to ask him or anything? I know I'm throwing you out there on the spot. But...
Yeah, I just want to know a little bit more about your stuff you're fighting this Friday.
Yeah, I'll be fighting Friday the 19th at the DoubleTree Hotel in Ontario under the Thompson Boxing Promotions.
Okay, and then I don't know if I heard it earlier or not, but do you know who your opponent is?
I believe it's Terrence Perel or something like that.
Okay, do you know a lot about him?
Not really.
Okay. And then also, is this card going to be televised at all, or maybe GoFi Live or anything?
Probably GoFiLive.com. It's probably going to be streamed or something. I don't think it's going to be televised.
Okay. I'd definitely like to watch this fight, though, if I can somehow maybe find a way to stream it or at least catch it on YouTube or something the next day. I really enjoy watching you fight.
Yeah, I believe it's going to be streamed. I don't know, like, because I've been trying to look for my other fight on YouTube, and I don't think they post stuff up. I think they have copyrights, but I do believe they do stream them live.
Oh, okay. All right, well, that's all I had on that. What else were you talking about there, Josh?
No, I'm just on Javier. Now, before we let you go and stuff, man, let everyone know where they can find you at, you know, all your on your Facebook, your Twitter, and they can follow your career.
Well, everybody can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Javier Torres Jr., and please do so. You know, just keep up with my career, with my upcoming events. I'll just post up and follow me at, like I said, at Instagram or Twitter, Javier Torres Jr.
Great, man. And I appreciate you coming on, especially last minute. I knew you had the fight coming up and thought it would be great to get you on. Appreciate it. And we'll stay in touch, man, and you're always welcome on the show, man.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No problem, Javier. Take care, man, and good luck.
Thank you.
All right, that was Javier, the Monster Torres, heavyweight fighter, and very entertaining fighter. I've had the pleasure of watching for the Matadors, as well as seeing his two of his three pro fights, and they're both entertaining. He's a good kid, smart kid, and interesting to see what he can do with his career. He's going 3-0, hoping to go 4-0 under the Thompson boxing promotion banner. We're back with Ron, man. Ron. Where were we? We're talking about Benavidez, weren't we?
Yeah, Benavidez.
All right, so now, how about this? Was this maybe an awakening for him to maybe know that he shouldn't be stepping up in he shouldn't step up the level of competition just yet? Or do you think he is ready for that?
I honestly think he's ready, and I think this was a good... You know, it's kind of good to get tested before you're really going to jump up, because he's really like right there on the cusp anyways. And this was a really good test for him all the way around. I mean, if you look at pretty much every round he dominated, and he definitely has his speed, he definitely has power, and he just keeps an eye out for a prime opportunity. And you know, like I said, you said it also, but I think he could have really taken control of this fight a lot earlier. Maybe this is a good wake-up call to maybe start doing that and really stepping up. But as far as fight-wise, skill-wise, the kid is just phenomenal. He's always been one of my top three favorite fighters to watch, and getting lit up like this isn't going to change anything, but he's definitely... I don't know. I think it was just a good test and a good. It was actually good for him, I think, getting kind of lit up like this. But a scary moment, without a doubt.
Definitely. Before we get our next guest on, I wanted to ask you your feelings and thoughts on what probably might be the fight of the year: Brandon Bam Bam Rios versus Mike Mile High Alvarado.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I did the conference call, Bob Arum said, this is going to be the fight of the year. And I'll tell you what, he was pretty much right. This fight from the start of the bell was just phenomenal. I mean, it was just intense. I mean, and to watch it live, oh man, I was like at the edge of my seat the entire thing, because they were just giving each other a pounding. And it was I actually picked Alvarado to win, because I really thought he was going to. And Bam Bam, this guy's just a freaking beast on the inside. You could just see Alvarado's head getting snapped back. And then when he'd step away and Alvarado had his distance, he would just, you know, kind of light up Bam Bam. But it was just one of the best fights that I've seen in years. And I cannot wait to see this tape delay or video of it.
Yeah, it was It was a tremendous fight. I'll tell you this, man. I lost my voice right now just watching it on TV and yelling and such an exciting fight. I think Brandon literally has a few loose screws in his head because he loves to get hit. I mean, that key guy, he doesn't feel pain almost. It's very scary. I mean, his pain, really, the pain he feels is when he has to lose weight to make weight. I think that hurts him more than getting hit in the head.
Oh, no doubt. But, I mean, there's without a doubt, this kid can, he can fight. I mean, he can definitely fight. And actually, both of them just have tremendous stamina, and both of them can take a shot. I mean, it's just, of course, it was evident. But I'll tell you what, it was definitely, everybody there was on the edge of their seats. And it was kind of a shame because when the Donaire fight came on, it was almost kind of like a letdown. But the Donaire fight was actually pretty good, too. But I don't know. This Rios Alvarado, for me, is going to go down as one of the best fights that I've ever seen. That's for sure.
All right. One of the questions that me and producer David Chen were talking about with the Rios fight, rematch, yes or no?
Definitely. I would love to see a rematch and another one after that.
Now, do you feel, and another thing we were talking about, do you think it was a premature stoppage?
From what I could see, I could understand the ref's point of view of it because it kind of looked like he wasn't hitting back. You could tell he was a little bit shaken or whatever, and it's hard to say. I think it was a good stoppage. I mean, it's as much as you'd wanted to see it go on. You don't want to see anyone get hurt at the same time, especially if there's going to be a rematch. You want to, it's hard to say because if something would have happened, then it could have gone either way.
Hey, fellas, sorry to interrupt again, but we got Tyrell Hollywood Hendricks on the line. We got our next guest. Should we throw him on with you guys right now?
Let's get Tyrell on.
Yeah, I'm going to have to cut out because I'm going to go through the mountains here and I'm going to lose my signal, but
Ron, okay, if you have to go, Ron, before you go, can you just remind all the listeners, everybody, where they can read your articles, they can hear your show, and how they can connect with you online?
I do a show with Puppy with B, we do a show with Boxing Radio, Punches and Bunches, every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock, PM Pacific Standard Time, with Puppy with B, Undisputed Fight Magazine. And I'm self to amateur.com and Seconds Out every Wednesday night. And then Josh always calls in. Always a great show when he calls in.
Awesome, Ron. Thanks for calling in, though.
Okay, well, you guys take care.
All right, stay safe out there. We'll talk to you soon. All right, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, we got light heavyweight Tyrell Hollywood Hendricks on the line with us. Tyrell, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, Tyrell, man? How's everything going with you?
Everything is good. How about with you guys?
Always good, man. Hey, it's been a while since we had you on. Last time we had you on, you're coming off a victory against Lauren Myers. You hurt your hand. From what I know, you talk to me, your hand is nice and healed up. How's the hand going? Tell everybody.
The hand is great. The hand is 100%. You know, it's been about 5 months since I've been off. So we made sure we got, some of the best rehab, done over here in Beverly Hills. So I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Tyrell, can you remind me real quick exactly what the nature of injury was?
It was basically a typical boxer fracture where I hit the guy on the top of the head. And the guy, he could take a punch because, I knocked him out about three times, but he had a really big head, man. I broke my hand. So it was a boxer fracture.
And it was it in your hand or was it in your wrist?
No, it was on my hand. It was on my hand. It's actually the last two fingers. That's what they consider like the boxer fracture. So anyone who knows boxing, I wasn't punching correctly or I didn't have my hand closed all the way.
Now, you're coming off the injury, Evan. What was the hardest part about being injured, man, not being able to train? Because I follow you on Facebook, and I see it was killing you, man. How did you handle that?
I'm going to be honest. I never had an injury like that before. I've never broken, a hand or anything. So it was kind of depressing. You know, I see how guys get depressed and get down on themselves because, you know, you're used to doing something every day, especially being active. You know, when you're not able to do that, it kind of puts you in a zone. And now it makes sense to me why all boxing coaches tell you to stay in the gym when you're injured. Because if you sit at home, all kind of nasty things start getting in your head and you kind of get a little off track.
Right now, you told me that you got some big news. I want you to tell everybody, first and foremost, what your big news is, man, on your next fight and everything.
Yes, I'm fighting November 17th for the WBF light heavyweight championship of the world. I'm fighting against a guy named Anatoly Dvornchin from the Ukraine, and it's gonna be here in Los Angeles, downtown LA, at the Bonaventure Hotel, and I'm ready to go.
Now, what is the schedule for? Is it 12 rounder or what?
It's a 12-round fight, you know, which I'm really excited about. You know, this is what I dreamed about. You know what I'm saying? Being able to, you know, fight 12 rounds and go to war if needed. So I'm excited about that. Yeah, it's a 12-rounder.
Now you've never fought in a scheduled 12-rounder. I think the most you've gone scheduled was 6 rounds. How's this being that your first fight coming off an injury? How's that? You think your body's gonna be able to handle that, and how's that gonna take, you know, on your training and everything?
Well, I'm training like an animal right now. You know, I'm over at the wild card right now, and we getting lots of work in. I'm sparring with big cruiserweight Latif Power. You know, he helping me get ready. So, you know, for most people, they would say, they wouldn't want to jump in and do a 12-rounder. After coming off an injury and having, you know, only been going 6 rounds before that. But I've been training, I've been running crazy, and we've been sparring a lot. So I'm ready to test myself and take that step.
Great, man. Dude, what kind of feeling is it, you know, you get hurt, you know, you get a victory, right? You get hurt, you're on the shelf for a while, and then your first fight you get offered is a title shot. You know, it's a dream come true, a lot of emotions running. How was that feeling for you?
I mean, I'm going to be quite honest. I was nervous as hell at first. When they first told me, I said, dang, like, I'm like, wow, this is, you know, this is big, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, these type of chances and shots don't come around often. So, you know, you got to just suck it up and, you know, and do, you know, do what you're supposed to do. And, you know, prepare and train hard. Like, I've had, you know, 7 weeks to get ready for this. So, you know, I'm ready and I'm focused. But like you said, you know, being injured, and I think it kind of helped me develop a little bit by watching fights, you know, just like I watched the fight yesterday. When you're injured, it gives you a lot of time to sit back and reflect. When you actually training and fighting and stuff, you don't really have time to do that. It's always on the, you know, you always training for a fight or something like that. But when you're injured, you could kind of sit back and watch certain things and see certain things. So I think it kind of, you could look at it from a good standpoint as well.
Now, Terrell, you said this was your first, like, major injury that you've had in your career, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was there any point when you were just recovering that you thought to yourself, man, you know, what if I can't be the same way I used to be? You know, like, did that fear ever cross your mind?
Yes, it actually did. You know, because the doctor told me 5 months. I said, what? I said, there's no way I'm taking 5 months off. And I came back to the gym in 2 months, and the hand wasn't quite strong. And I was sparring with Olympian Sean Estrada. And I was pretty much only using my left hand, and I was like, because I felt like a little pain, like it didn't feel as strong in my right hand, and I actually received another injury by coming back too early and only training with the left hand, where I got a big laceration cut over my lip. So when you try to come back and doing stuff when you know you're not supposed to, you can kind of add to other injuries when you do that.
Yeah, I mean, what can you tell some of the other young fighters out there, guys who might be getting their first sports injury? You know, what can you tell them from somebody who's been through it, you know, for that first time when everything's unknown, you don't know how to recover, things like that?
Basically, what I could say is just, you know, stay positive and do what your coach tell you by staying in the gym, because it's another guy at the gym who has the same break that I did. His name is Wale. He go by Lucky Boy. He broke his hand like 2 weeks before my fight, and he stayed in the gym. He broke the right hand like me, and he just continued to use his left hand. So he developed his left where, you know, I mean, if you get a broken nose, which I've had or whatever, you can still come to the gym and still perfect other parts of your craft. So what I tell every young guy who's out there who got a little injury, make sure you stay in the gym. Don't get away, because once you take off the accelerator, it's kind of hard to get back.
Right, there's something that you can always work on besides, you know, punching the bags and things like that. Now, let me ask you this. I believe the World Boxing Foundation belt that you're fighting for, right? The World Boxing Foundation. Yeah, I think their light heavyweight title, I think that used to belong to guys like Roy Jones and Antonio Tarver. Am I right about that?
Yes.
So what does it mean for you fighting for the same title that's been held by guys like that?
Wow, I mean, to be honest, when they offered it to me, I couldn't really believe it, and I was like, well, let me find out, let me see what the history is, and then I actually Googled it, and I did some research, and I seen guys like Antonio Tarver and Roy Jones had, and it was just an honor to me just to even fight for something that these guys has held. And I also seen that Evander Holyfield held the WBF heavyweight championship of the world, so, you know, I'm just an honor, you know, I'm going to try my butt off to make sure I can, you know, I can one day be in the same breath as him. That's what I hope for.
Now, do you know anything about this Ukrainian fighter that you're going to be facing?
Yes, I know a lot about him. We trained at Fortune Boxing Club together. I sparred over probably about 50 rounds with him, so I have a very, very understanding of how he fights.
So you guys have this sparring experience, this sort of prior interaction. Do you think this might be a factor in why you guys are being matched up right now? I mean, tell us about the process of how this fight got made. Like, did they pick you guys? Did you pick them? How did it come through?
I think they kind of picked me. You know, I mean, I wasn't up for it. I just came off an injury. But at the same time, I think that's what these managers and people do. They see a guy like, oh, this guy's injured. This guy is kind of on the shelf. Let's pick him now. Maybe he's just sitting on the couch getting fat, you know. Let's take him right now. So I don't know exactly how they pick me, but just as much as I know his style, I think he knows my style as well.
So you definitely think they're trying to take advantage of you a little bit because they've been in there with you. Now, do you think you're a different fighter now than when you guys had sparred back then?
Yeah, I'm totally different fighter. I'm a little bit more seasoned, you know. I did all my learning. I didn't have a huge amateur background, so I did all my learning from sparring with the best in the gym. You know what I'm saying? I learned from there. And I'm just now, I would say, it's just now starting to click to the point where I actually know how to fight. Where, you know, back in the, you know, when I first started, it was just all aggression and a work ethic. Now that I'm in there using my mind a little bit more, and I'm a little bit more seasoned, you know, being a professional now for 4 years.
What can you tell us about his style and what he's good at, the type of things that you guys are going to be really paying attention to and work around?
Well, basically, he has a typical European style, stand up tall, straight up, you know. He sways with his left hook, you know. I think that's his biggest punch is his left hook. He's a little unorthodox and awkward, you know, as far as how he throw punches. He doesn't throw punches like a typical, you know, fighter, the 1-2-3, you know, like he's kind of unorthodox in a way.
Well, I mean, it seems like you guys are very familiar, so I'm sure you guys got a great game plan, you know, working that you guys are working on in order to do it. So back to you, Josh, whatever you want to say.
Man, that was big. No, go ahead, Terrell.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it's great to hear that you're back on the bright path and you're getting that title shot. Before I let you go, I wanted you to, you know, just say anything else that's on your mind and let everyone know where they can follow you at, all the social media and everything.
Okay. Most definitely. Man, I just want to thank everybody for the love and support. You know, dream come true to fight for a title. I'm working really hard. You guys can follow me on Facebook, you know, Terrell Hendricks. You can also follow me on Instagram at Los Angeles and Twitter at Team Hendricks. So I'm just ready to, you know, train really hard and be victorious. And, you know, maybe we can do an interview once I have the belt around my waist.
Oh, definitely, man. We'd love to get you on right when you get that strap around your waist, man. I'm excited to see. I'll try to make it out there, too, to show you some support out there. It should be a great fight for you, man.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Hey, man, anytime, man. Thanks for coming on. You're always welcome on the show anytime, bro. All
right, Terrell. All good right. Luck. Take care
you
of that
You guys
hand,
take care.
Okay? All right, now.
All right.
All right, bye. All right,
bye. That was Tyrell Hollywood Hendricks getting his title shot finally that he's been waiting for. Young guy, young career, and looking to, you know, maintain and capitalize on the opportunity that's at hand for him. And hopefully his hand holds up, David.
I mean, he sounds like a pretty positive guy. You know what I mean? Like he's optimistic. That's a good story. Him, a guy like him getting a shot like this, I don't know. It's nice to hear stories like this. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been lucky enough to see him fight a few times. Man, it's escaping my mind right now. The promotion. It's escaping my mind right now. I'll try to get back to that later. But I've seen him fight. And, you know, he was entertaining. This first fight I saw him, I think he finished the guy off. And the second fight I saw him, he again impressively knocked out his fighter. You know, his opponent. And he's always looked good. He goes in there and has a lot of talent. And he's very sharp with his punches. So he's a young fighter. He was not undefeated, but, you know, like we always say, you know, the records don't matter. He only has one loss, and that was against Paul Mendez. You know, that was a split decision. So he's a young kid who's trying to make the most of every opportunity he gets, you know, and I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, and, you know, it seems like the other camp sort of picked him to be somewhat of an opponent, right? Like, they had 50 rounds of sparring, like you said, so they feel like they're familiar with his style. They saw that he had an injury and that he hasn't been in the pro for very long. He's got, I think, 10 fights. So maybe they are trying to take advantage of him a little bit. But, you know, it doesn't sound like it's bothering him at all. He's just glad to get in there with somebody, to, like, fight for something meaningful. And, you know, he's just a positive guy, and I like to see positive guys in this sport who are, you know, who, like, keep their head on their objectives and who's actually trying to win.
Definitely. That's always good that you hear. And speaking, since we're on the subject of young fighters, I know you were making a comparison earlier. Let's get back onto that card we were talking about earlier on the top rate card. T-Red, Trevor McCombie, man. What did you think about this kid? 19 years old, 7 wins, 7 knockouts.
I mean, he's definitely making a statement. Here's what I'll tell you what I like about him. Now, I'm not going to crown him and say he's a great fighter or anything. He only had 7 fights, and his particular opponent in this one, I believe his name is Elicio Durazo. Did I say that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm the wrong person on how to announce the age.
Yeah, I mean, that fella was definitely outgunned, right? Like, Trevor is obviously a really, really talented kid. He's tall. He's strong. Like, he's lean, but he's also athletic. You know what I mean? He's got all the talent, the looks, and it really shows in the ring. He doesn't just look the part. Like, when he throws punches, they're sharp, and he's got good technique, right? So he does have the good fundamentals, and that's not just me saying it just to say it, because not every fighter in this sport has good fundamentals, but he does have them, and he uses it. And what I like about him is that he's got a guy who's not a threat to him, and he went after him really hard. Right, and not every fighter has that kind of mentality, neither. Right, you can tell Trevor is the kind of kid who thinks, well, if it's obvious that you can't really hurt me and that I have an advantage over you, why don't I just, you know, press the issue right now? And that's really nice to see at this stage. Now, I don't know if he's going to be able to keep doing that as he rises in the ranks, because not everybody he goes up against is going to be as defenseless. I don't want to say as Durazo was, but you get what I'm saying. You get what I'm trying to say. Like, there's going to be guys who can take his punches. There's going to be guys who are as tall and strong and as athletic as he is. But for a 19-year-old to be that strong, to have good boxing fundamentals, and, you know, pardon my saying, but it never hurts to have a good-looking white guy who can fight, right?
Definitely. That's funny you say that. can you remember the last time there's been a real white guy that could fight? You know, they're pretty extinct as of late.
And so Kelly Pavlik is still fighting, and he's not bad. I mean, people would like to give him crap all the time, but Kelly Pavlik is actually a pretty good fighter. It's just you know, I don't think it's cool to be a Kelly Pavlik fan anymore. So everybody needs somebody else.
No, but it's cool to say a Kelly Pavlik joke. Well, I'm going to stay away from that right now. But that, you know, Trevor was on the show a few, like less than a month ago. He's a very disciplined kid, and that's my favorite part about him. At 19 years old, you don't see that a lot. And he's very disciplined. He has great feet work. He doesn't get himself into a position where he can get in trouble, but yet he still attacks. And I think that's something that you were kind of saying that you wanted to see more from Donaire, right?
Right. I mean, Donaire has got that kind of ability. Like, you look at the way Trevor fight, right? He's got a guy who, as soon as the fight began, realized that he's in deep, so he's trying to get away. But he followed him, right? He attacked him, and he always had his balance. His punches are sharp. That's because he's got technique, right? That's why all his punches, he can turn his body into him and then get the proper amount of power on it. He's never off balance. He doesn't just throw a couple of shots and then get sloppy. He puts his punches together very well. That's really, really impressive from somebody who's only had 6 fights before this 7th one, right? So when you're in there with somebody, you know, because as a fighter, you go in there, right? The guy touches you a little bit. You basically know whether or not he's a threat to you. You know what I mean? You get caught a couple of times, you touch him, he touch you, you should be able to know what you can or cannot get away with. So with Trevor, it feels like he's the type of guy who says, okay, you can't do anything to me, therefore I am going to go 100%. Whereas Donaire, I feel like, settles down a little bit more. He almost fights like he's sparring with you half the time.
Yeah, you know what? That's the perfect way to do it.
Like, killer instinct is a very important thing in boxing. It doesn't make you a better fighter, but for you to succeed as a boxing star, the killer instinct is something a lot of people want to see, you know?
Exactly. That's what everyone wants to see nowadays. You know, you don't have to have that one-punch knockout power, but you got to have that killer instinct. You got to have that excitement, that flair. You know,
I mean,
like,
here's the thing, right? I'm sorry for interrupting you real quick. I just want to, you know, get this before I forget it, but I don't know if Trevor McCombie can do this with a world-class fighter. I don't know if he can keep knocking people out in the first round. I don't know these things. He's still too new. But I know one thing. He's the kind of guy who gets rid of people he doesn't think belongs in the ring with him. And not every fighter does that. You see what I mean? I can say that about him at least, that when he's in there with somebody that he knows doesn't belong there with him, he will stop that guy. Whereas other fighters like Donaire, who's got the ability but don't really use it that way. You see what I'm saying?
Definitely. I definitely see that. And I think that's what you're supposed to do. When, especially as a young fighter like Trevor, you don't want to take the fighter lightly. You know, like, I'm always been a fan of saying this, you know. Everyone says, oh, well, he's undefeated, you know, or guys who haven't lost a fight and they haven't fought anyone big. It's like, that's still hard not to lose a fight. You know what I mean? It's not easy.
Yeah, people seem to think that just because you have talent or something, like people think that boxing maybe is cruise control. They look at numbers on paper, but you have to always remember that boxing is an effort. Like, every fight is an effort. You got to train for it, first of all. And then once you're there in the ring, you got to put the whole fight together, punch by punch, minute by minute, round by round. It's like a complete performance. You got to be really focused and really disciplined, you know, because one lapse in judgment can make you either look bad or worse, get hurt and lose the fight. Because that's why consistency is so difficult in this sport. That's why only some of the world-class guys got true consistency. And if Trevor can be consistent in being a knockout artist, I mean, hey, that's not a bad place to be. And I'm really surprised he's only 19 years old.
Oh, I know. I mean,
he doesn't talk like it. He doesn't look like it. He doesn't fight like it.
That's my thing. Is he's so disciplined. You can hear it in his voice, the way he handles himself, the way he talks, the way he presents himself. He has a pretty solid team. I think he's based out of Arizona now. I'm not sure, but I know he trains. He's been training out of the Oxnard gym, the Garcia gym. I think he's going about his career the right way. It sounds like I'm pumping him up a lot, and I think I might be, but rightfully so. I think he's someone to watch out for. I definitely think he's an exciting fighter to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think. I mean. at this point, we can only speculate whether or not he's going to become world class. You know, like all that stuff, we shouldn't even waste our time talking about it. He still needs to get in there with more people. He still needs to fight tougher opposition. You know, he's a young guy. He's new. But I there's one thing I thought of when I was watching him fight is I want to see him with a trainer like Andre Ward's trainer, Virgil Hunter. Like,
yeah,
he reminded me of one of those guys that would be good in that type of environment. I don't know why, but that's just what I thought of in my mind when I watched the fight. You know, good fundamentals, you know, like smart guy, focus, that kind of thing.
Definitely, and Virgil Hunter's been a name that's been thrown around for a bunch of fighters lately, and that would be interesting to see that. But because right now, I can't see him doing that. When we had him on the show, he seems a very, very loyal to who he's been with.
Right.
But, man, we'll see what he does for the rest of his career. But on that note, let's go on to another fight on the undercard. Javier, who's on the show recently, a family of the Garcias, Javier Garcia, Carlos Garcia, ended in a technical draw. He drew first blood by knocking down Roman, and then Roman answered back with his own version of a knockdown, which was just as vicious. What do you think about that fight?
Ooh, I thought that's a little bit controversial. I think the only way that it doesn't become a controversy is because it's technically on that undercard that not everybody would have seen. You know what I mean? Like, if this was a main event or something, or if this was on a big televised undercard and people saw the way it happened, people would think, I don't know. People are going to argue about it a little bit. You see what I mean? Now, my personal opinion is that he was losing the fight, right? You know, you can say, hey, man, they traded knockdowns. Yeah, but he got knocked down second. He got knocked down harder. You know what I mean?
He was hurt.
Yeah, he knocked down Roman first, but Roman recovered and then hurt him back. So if that's where the fight ended, I got to look at the guy who's hurt more. I got to look at the guy who's got momentum at that very moment. And I think that's why they had that post-fight tussle. You saw what I mean? I mean, I didn't know exactly what happened. But the two corners were going at it, the two fighters. Like, Roman was obviously trying to get at him a little bit. And I think they felt like they were maybe perhaps cheated out of it a little bit to have it be called a no decision, which it should be called a no decision. I don't know what this technical draw thing is because that's not what happened. I don't know why the California Commission did it that way. What do you think?
Only in the beautiful, wonderful world of California, state of California. That's the only time we see this. You know, this reminds me of and I don't know who his opponent was, but I think it was James Toney had a similar situation like this, too, in his career, in California, and he was really pissed off. And then, if I'm not mistaken, it was all Friday Night Fights, too, on ESPN. I'm not quite sure. But I'll tell you this, and I'll start off with controversy right here. I think Javier Garcia got out lucky out of that fight. I think he asked basically the doctor to stop it. Because if you look at it, they don't argue with it. And Ron Garcia, the coroner, goes and says, all right, go tell the doctor, go ahead and tell the referee.
Yeah, you think that's why Roman and his camp might have been mad? Because they think there was some sort of shenanigans going on that maybe Robert Garcia, being the guy, you know, being the name trainer for this card, got five guys fighting that night, got the world champion. You think they thought they basically rescued Javier? I mean, I'm just saying here. I'm not saying this is what I believe. But do you think that's what Roman and his camp was thinking at the time?
Maybe, but I think it could have been more or less like Robert Garcia knows the California rules very well. I mean, everybody should know the California rules, but not everyone does. And he obviously knows that he trains out here. He has a lot of fights out here. And I think he knows that his fighter was hurt, and he basically made sure the referee or the ring doctor saw that he could not continue.
But I mean, okay, here's the thing though, because saying that make it sound like Robert Garcia told the doctor to do something. You know what I mean? Because when the doctor, when it comes to a fight like this, the doctor's always checking out the fighter between rounds. You know, let's get that clear. Like, the doctor's right there. It's not like Robert waved him over to, like, make him do something.
Well,
to get, you know, no, like, yeah. The doctor was going to look at the cut no matter what.
Yeah, let me rephrase. I'm not meaning it like that. What I actually mean is, like, all right, you know when we see a fighter have a cut over his eye and he wants to continue? You know, he tries his hardest to make sure the fight goes on. he's going to lie to the refs. Oh, yeah, I see perfectly. I got 20/20 vision when he only can see out of one eye. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think this was more like Robert Garcia maybe telling Javier or whatever. Like, hey, just be say what you got to say or, you know, say the truth if you can't see, you know. They weren't trying to fight for the fight not to be stopped. Do you know what, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. Like, they weren't like, hey, come on, man, I'm going to get a win on my record here. Don't let this cut stop me. I know exactly what you're saying. And I don't like to talk about stuff like this simply because I wasn't there. And I wasn't in the corner, you know, so there's really nothing I can say about it. I can only look at what happened. And what happened is, in my personal opinion, is that Javier Garcia was in trouble in that particular moment, and Jose Roman had momentum as the fight was stopped. And we will never know what was going to happen. But it was looking bad for Javier Garcia.
Yeah, but you know what? To give a shout-out to Javier, though, for taking on such a tough fight. Being as his first comeback fight after a while, man. Like, how many people making their first comeback fight after not fighting for a year or two or whatever is going to fight a guy who's, what, was it 14-0, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, he was like 14-0, 6 feet tall, something like that.
Yeah, that's not an easy fight, so.
And that was a hard shot he got hit by, too, because he was throwing a hook when he got caught with that. So it was a better hook that he landed on Roman, which knocked him down the first round. Like, he got caught worse. Right, it was his power combined with Roman's power, so he went down pretty hard on that one.
Definitely, and then that fight reminds you. Let's say the fight continued its pace and didn't end like that. Wasn't it like a mini version of what we were going to see later on in the night between Bam Bam and Alvarado?
It sort of was, and I actually had no idea where it was going. Like, even when it got stopped, and you know, I'm sitting here saying that it was that Roman had the momentum. I'm not saying he was going to win. Like, he just had the momentum. He just got the man hurt and stuff. I don't know what would have happened. But yeah, it was one of those fights. The first fight of the night, too, really reminded me of what we were going to see later. I was like, oh, wow, these guys are just a smaller version of the Kelco main event there.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's why I was saying this card was put together so well. It was hands down one of the better cards of this year. In all, top to bottom. Yeah, I didn't get to ask you, David. I know I asked Ron. What were your thoughts on the Benavidez fight?
I remember being on Facebook talking to people when I was watching this, you know, watching Twitter and, you know, reading chat rooms, everything, right? Because, oh, man, he was looking good for what? Like 23 minutes? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then that last minute, okay, I'll say this. With all the quote-unquote early stoppages we've been getting in the sport recently, I think Jose got lucky. Because that was potentially a Amir Khan-level shot that he took there, if you know what I mean by Amir Khan. Like the knockout that almost ruined his career and, like, stalled him for so long and, like, gave him such a black eye on his name. Like, it was that level of sort of shot that Jose took, and he could have easily lost the fight because of it. And I think he's lucky that the refs didn't stop it. Honestly.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that as far as Javi, this is my opinion on Jose Benavidez. I think he's talented. I really like him. I'm high up on him just like everybody else. But I don't think he took this fight seriously. Maybe if it's not seriously, he didn't look like he wanted to finish. Let's talk about that killer instinct. He didn't look like he had a killer instinct in this fight. I bet that you're wrong. If you look at all the fighters that this guy Miranda has fought, and you know, I know Sal's make fights and top matchups, but this is like Danny Garcia, champion, Mauricio Pereira, he's a hell of a fighter who can upset a lot of people. Joel Diaz, who is old, but former, you know, champion on all that stuff. You know, like, the pedigree of fighters he's lost to are all by knockout. And Benavidez is supposed to be that kind of pedigree. I would expect him to finish this guy off. And he just looked like he was there to show on a boxing clip.
Well, I mean, doesn't it look like still, I mean, if you watch all Jose's fight, doesn't it still look like he's trying to find his style in the ring?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like he's still trying to figure out, you know, what are my best punches? How do I put it together? You know, what do I want to use against what kind of opponent? Like, he's still putting it together. But the concern is there. I mean, the first time he got caught by a flush left hook, you know, it wasn't like he got countered particularly hard. I think he dropped his right hand at the wrong time.
Yeah.
He figured the punch wasn't going to come, right? Like, the timing was just off. And he, the moment he dropped it to back up, he got caught with a left hook. And he got hurt hard. It wasn't like a flash knockdown. Like, Tito Trinidad is a good example. You know, that guy would get knocked down and be like, okay, shoot, I got knocked down. Let me get back up and get back in the fight. Jose got knocked down and was out of the fight for the rest of it. He was just lucky that was the last round. And you can't, you know, it wasn't sustained damage. It wasn't any of these things. It was the first flush left hook that he got caught by, which means that could easily happen again. You see what I mean? And that's the frustrating thing about boxing is no matter how talented somebody might be, at first, no matter how good their punches are, how capable they are, how well they put their punches together, they can do all these things. And then eventually they get to a point where you suddenly realize, oh, but, you know, they get knocked out every single time. I mean, look at Jorge Linares, guys like that. I hope Jose doesn't become like a Jorge Linares.
Yeah, I know. That's what's scary is that hopefully this is not a sign of things to come. You know, I really believe that Benavidez is a very talented fighter, and he does look like a guy with a lost identity right now, that he does not know what he wants to be in there, as a great example that you pointed out. And let's go back and compare him almost to Trevor Mahomby. We talked about the age thing. Look at the age thing here. You could tell the different level of maturity and discipline, I guess you could say. I think Trevor being 19 years old seems more of a man in the ring as far as identity, knowing what he wants to be, the discipline inside the ring than Benavidez does at 20 years old.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of hard to say because because Jose was putting on a very good fight. He was moving and jabbing and doing everything very well for most of the fight. You know what I mean? Like he didn't fight poorly at all or anything like that. It's just when a fighter fights the whole fight, quote-unquote, perfectly and then gets caught once and then gets hurt that bad, that is for the world to see now. Like, that is no longer a secret. Everybody he fights from now on is going to be looking to see whether they can do that too. You know what I mean? Just let your hands go to see if Jose will get caught. You know?
Yeah.
Hit him to see if he'll just lose right there and then. I mean, that's an extremely dangerous thing to let out into the world.
Yeah, and I understand that he was having a great performance for, like you said, 23 minutes. But didn't it seem to you almost that he was going through the motions even, though? Like, he just, I don't know. To me, it looked like he didn't go for that knockout like he probably could have.
Definitely. I mean, with the number of times he was able to hit Miranda with the jab alone, and he had the great jab, which means he could have followed up with some more shots, right? And Miranda wasn't exactly being cute in there. He wasn't exactly avoiding many of those. So if Jose wanted to step it up, and it looked like he was comfortable the whole time, too. He was loose. He had the energy. He wasn't exactly pushing his conditioning. You know what I mean? He wasn't exactly trying to really force the issue. And, see, I don't know if he had fought differently that it would have been any different, because Miranda looked like a tough guy. You know what I mean? I still don't know about Jose Benavidez's punching power.
Yeah.
So you know, all this stuff is could have been and would have been. The only thing I'm concerned about is the one thing that happened in the end, which is he got caught once and hurt him really bad. I don't know if that's the kind of thing that's going to help him in that division. 140 pounds, a lot of guys can hurt you.
Yeah, as we saw later on in that night, we're going to go back to Bam Bam and Alvarado. But,
I mean, we're talking about this, but Jose is aware of this more than the rest of us. You know, he knows this.
Right?
Right. He knows exactly what happened, and then only he can take steps towards fixing it, making sure it never happened again. But the guy was hurt. I mean, he was blinking in the corner afterwards, remember? They're giving him water. He's blinking. He's still trying to shake his head. Like, the guy was hurt for, like, a good 2-3 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let me ask you this, though. I guess it's to make a positive part about him getting hurt. Were you impressed by being 20 years old of his ability to hold on and make sure he stayed on his feet? Like, He didn't try to slug it out. He didn't try to fight the guy back or try to box him. He held on. He kept hugging and kept hugging and made sure he didn't get hit with a solid punch again.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said earlier that it's frustrating to see the chin issue come up, because I really thought Jose Benavidez does everything else in his power correctly. You know what I mean? He was jabbing correctly. He was putting his punches together well. He was moving well. Yeah, he could have probably fought harder, but he was still doing everything properly. You know, he kept in control in there. I thought he actually showed a lot of maturity in that ring. Yeah, I thought he fought like somewhat like a experienced veteran. It's so frustrating to see a fighter do all that, but could potentially have a weak chin that would just undermine everything else he would try to do. Because chin is the one thing you can't really teach and you can't really avoid. You know, that issue is going to come up again sometime in the future. And in this sport, it could be devastating.
Definitely. Yeah, but for damn sure, he knows what he has to do now and beware of. And of course, we'll see more of him. Top rank high on him, and I'm sure he'll be on the next top rank card. I mean, this is a silly question, I guess. But I guess we both agree that all in all, that whole card, we both agree it was a great card, and Bam Bam Rios and Alvarado was the fight to see that night.
I mean, definitely. I still don't know why that wasn't the main event. I guess the championship fight has to be the main event these days. You know, that's just how it goes. I mean, Donaire's got his pound-for-pound status, right? Things like that. I'm not trying to be hard on him. I'm not trying to be mean about this. But you know, why don't we call it a co-main event? You know what I mean? Like, do something about that.
Yeah, I am surprised. That's a good point. I am surprised that they didn't say call it a co-main event or anything. Normally you would hear something like that, you know?
And also, I mean, I guess it's unavoidable. This is going back to Donaire real quick. I guess this is unavoidable when you're talking about world-class fighters who only wants to fight other world-class fighters. But do you ever get the feeling that Donaire is kind of a hard guy to make matches for?
Yeah, I think it's almost similar to what we're saying about his fighters not wanting to engage. People are kind of scared to fight him, you know?
It's like, I mean, it would be okay if everybody's scared of his power, and then they let him do the fighting. But then he sort of takes it easier, too, which is a problem. You know what I mean? It's not a problem if his opponent refuses to attack him. It is a problem if his opponent refuses to attack him, and then he refuses to attack his opponent, and then they just look at each other.
Yeah, now, would you say, let's use this. Roy Jones Jr. loves Donaire, it seems like. Do you think Donaire is kind of having a problem getting fights like Roy Jones used to have back in the day?
I think so, but then Roy made it up by fighting everybody, you know what I mean? Like his mailman, you know, so the joke goes. But you know, Roy would hurt guys who are trying to run away from him, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like you can't really stay away from Roy Jones. Like, if, like, the moment you show Roy that you're not there to fight him, that you just want to survive. He doesn't let you survive. He goes after you. He hits you to the body. He knocks you out to the body, things like that. He goes after you. And I want to see a little bit more of that from Donaire. And it's not just because I'm bored watching him fight. He's a really good fighter. He's obviously one of the most skilled fighters in the world. But I actually think it'll be better for him to fight harder. It will make him better, not just more entertaining, too, which doesn't hurt.
Definitely. I like to see him start fighting everybody and going after the win, going after that victory no matter what, kind of like what you said. On this one, I kind of give him a pass, though. I expected more from Nishioka. I was more or less disappointed in Nishioka than anything.
I did. I did, too, because I thought he could at least make it awkward for Donaire. You know what I mean? I thought what he was going to do is sort of touch Donaire, right? And then make Donaire miss and then touch him again. You know, little things like that. But instead, he just waited for Donaire to throw the shot first while standing so far that he can't possibly retaliate even if Donaire does throw. You see what I mean? So it just made for a not very active fight because neither fighter put themselves in a position to really do much to the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of feel bad for them, too, having to follow up It's a war, you know. Let me, you know, I wanted to ask you this too. I think it's kind of a funny thing just to bring up. Do you think that fighting outside and with cooler temperatures affected the little guys like that?
I mean, I don't know exactly the temperature that was actually asked wrong when he was here, but I really can't say because I wasn't there. I mean, was it colder outside?
It was a bit cooler. It was a bit cooler last night in LA. It had to be in the 70s.
Right.
And that's,
I mean,
and that's pretty cool for LA.
Yeah, I mean, little physical things really show up in the ring. I mean, you're talking about something as physically demanding as fighting for 12 rounds. Every little thing bothers you. What you ate that day, right? What the temperature is, obviously. The altitude that your body is used to. Jet lag. The fact that Nishioka had to fly over from Japan. I mean, all these things really matter. You know what I mean? What if Nishioka came over here, he's not used to, let's say he's not used to the climate. And then let's say he's not used to the food here because, you know, he's an Asian guy. He's from Japan. He's used to eating other things. He feels better eating other things. What if he had diet problems? You know what I mean? What if he had problems warming up? It could be a lot of different things. I've seen him do better. This is not generally how he fights. Now, of course,
exactly.
O'Neill makes it hard for Nishioka to fight his usual fight. And, you know, if we really took our time to dissect film and to look at their fighting styles beforehand, we would have been basically predicted this. But even then, I think he would have done a little bit better. But it's like you said, anything is possible, right? And being cold, hey, that never helps.
Definitely, definitely. And I didn't want to make up an excuse. I had to throw that out there. I'm going to move on from this card. I know you didn't get – I didn't even really get a chance to see. I saw the highlights they showed on Showtime. But it's more of a subject I wanted to talk about. Jermaine Taylor is continuing his comeback and trying to get a world title shot. He fought a guy named Raul Munoz. And David, Raul Munoz shouldn't have even been in that weight class. This guy was a fat, out-of-shape guy. And Taylor just murdered this guy. It was sad to see that Taylor was even fighting the guys like this. They interviewed him on the show, on Showbox, and Jermaine Taylor said that being Al Haymon is the way to go in 2013. It's going to be Jermaine Taylor's year, and he's going to get that title shot and be world champion again. Do you think this guy's just been hit in the head too much and he's off his rocker or what, man?
I mean, let's look at the middleweight sort of championship landscape to see if there's somebody Jermaine could beat. I don't see anybody like that. Not really. I mean,
yeah.
Who can he fight? Can he fight Daniel Gill? He better not go to Australia to fight Daniel Gill. He can't fight Martinez. Martinez wouldn't want to fight him. who's he going to fight for a middleweight title exactly? I mean, Al Haymon is a miracle worker, don't get me wrong. The guy can, you know, get a lot done, but Jermaine Taylor, this fight and his previous fight, he fought Jesse Nicolo. He's a Baltimore fighter, actually, from where I'm from.
Right.
And I've actually worked out in the same gym that Jesse works out sometimes. And Jesse Nicolo, you generally fight at either welterweight or junior middleweight, 154 pounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse already doesn't have a lot of knockouts in those weight categories. Now, Jesse's a good guy, you know, I'm not trying to dog him or anything, but here's the, so basically Jermaine fought a guy who's out of shape, and the fight before he fought a guy who's smaller than him. That's sort of the story of his career, isn't it?
Pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much it. My thing is, I'm concerned for the health of Taylor.
Of course.
You know, who's he going to fight? Golovkin?
The thing is, though, I mean, he can't go directly to a title shot, right, in the middleweight. Because there's actually a lot of good names in middleweight. You got to put in your dues a little bit in order to get a title shot. So who's he going to fight on his way there? There's a lot of hungry guys, a lot of younger guys who are really good. There's no way for him to steal a title. I don't think so. I don't see it.
No, exactly. And here's another thing, is fighting a guy like Raul Munoz. Now, obviously, they're calling it a stay busy fight. But isn't fighting a guy like Raul Munoz just, it's not good for him. It can't be good for Taylor, can it?
I mean, it's not teaching him anything new. It might just be putting the wrong idea in his head. Right. Into his head, he might think, oh, I still got it. I can still move a little bit. I can still punch a little bit. But look, who's paying to see Jermaine fight these days? This is a legit question, you know?
How about this? His fight wasn't even televised.
Right.
It was on the undercard of 2 8-round fights that were televised on Showbox. I mean, they just showed highlights of it. So no one's paying to see him fight. Obviously, they didn't want to even show this fight, and we all know why. We saw why. But
you hit it right on the button. Who's going to pay to watch him?
A lot of I don't know if I'm right in calling Jermaine the previous generation, but to me, he is the previous generation of fighters. And it seems like a lot of those guys want to come back. I think Ricky Hatton wants to come back, you know? And things like that. And Jermaine, it's like you said, it's about his health, and he's a good guy. He's never done anything for anybody to really dislike him unless you're just that much of a Bernard Hopkins fan. But that's last generation. That's old news, right? He's still fighting. That's fine. But here's the thing. If he gets a title somehow, that's actually the worst thing possible for Jermaine Taylor. If Jermaine Taylor gets a world title somehow again, that means he's going to be fighting some world-class contender and champion. Because you know Jermaine isn't going to win a title and retire.
Right.
If he wins a title, it's going to vindicate himself in his mind, thinking, oh, I'm still a world-class fighter. Let me go fight somebody like Martinez or Golovkin. And then he's going to be really in trouble. So that's the worst thing that can happen to him. So I'm kind of glad if that never happens, if that makes any sense,
Though
it sounds mean.
I don't want it to happen. I don't want him to fight anymore, personally. I don't think it's healthy for him. We all know about the extent of his injury would force him to formally, I guess, retire, I guess, and stop fighting for a while. He has blood on his brain. That can't be healthy. I don't care if the doctors gave him the okay to fight again. That still can't be healthy for him.
You know what I've always thought with Jermaine, and it's kind of scary to think about this in retrospect, but he's done a lot of interviews on camera, right? And when you watch him on camera, he always seems like a really positive, friendly guy when he was in his prime. And that was cool. You know, he was a good personality. He was a nice guy. Everybody liked him. But now, doesn't it kind of seem like the way he speaks and the way he acts, he's trying to sort of create this bubble around himself that he lives in? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, kind of. I see that. I've noticed how he's always bringing up Al Heyman now, which I think is hilarious. Like, I mean, everyone who's under Al Heyman always gives him a shout out, but like he goes to the point where, like in this on Friday, he said something along the lines like, you know, Al Heyman's the way to go. If you don't got Al Heyman, you know, you ain't going anywhere in boxing or whatever.
I don't know, man. Nobody, and he's the kind of guy that nobody can tell him what to do. You know what I mean? This is why I brought up the whole interview thing, because when he's talking on camera, it really feels like he's repeating something he tells himself, if you know
right.
what I mean. He's like, oh, you know, like I'm doing my best, and that's all that matters. And it's like you wish someone can just go, no, Jermaine, that's not enough.
It's almost like he has a bunch of yes men inside his own brain.
Yes, because I know it's not his family that's like, hey, man, you can do it. Certainly not his family.
I hope it's not his family.
I hope it's not something terrible like the people around him. Not his family, but the people who make money from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who need him to get on the undercard or whatever, need him to get on a championship match so they can collect their 10%. I hope it's not something like that. But I mean that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
Jermaine's the kind of guy who don't realize that he's the one being used up for these kind of, you know, selfish reasons. He doesn't realize that he's being used in this way. He thinks that they're just encouraging him to pursue his dreams, that he's still got some dreams that he has yet to attain.
Definitely, yeah. And I could see why. I could see that it could be those yes men around him that are doing that. I hope not as well. We just see it too often in boxing these days, but
it could be Al Heyman filling his head with those ideas. You know what I mean? Like, it could be Al going to him saying, hey, man, I can get you to be champion again. If you just go home and come with me, you know, I can do it. You see what I mean?
That's very true. That's also very true. I mean, there's so many factors in it. I just don't want to see him get hurt. At the end of the day, he was a great champion. He was a great fighter. Let's just hope that it doesn't end in a tragic story. You know what I mean?
Oh, speaking of averting possible tragedies, I just read Mickey Ward talking about the Rios Alvarado fight online, and I'm reading this. I'm not taking credit for this, but this is what I'm reading here. And he said that he loved the fight. He loved watching it. And Mickey gave a great quote. He said, you want to be a punch too early than a punch too late. So I think that the referee did a good job stopping it. I think that's a good way of describing what happened in that fight.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad that he came out and said something, because everyone was comparing it to the next guy.
Well, that's from someone like Mickey Ward. I mean, you got a lot of fighters, a lot of world-class warriors who have proved themselves in the ring before, like Mickey Ward, who come out saying, hey, you know, sometimes a good stoppage is a good stoppage. So you know what? The rest of us can just let that one go.
Right, right. Now, I don't know if you got to see this, though. Before we wrap up the show, I want to talk about a few things. Did you see the David Lemieux knockout that he had on Friday night?
Yes.
Is that KO of the year or what? Like, that guy gave him the NyQuil treatment.
I mean, that is the thing David is good at. You know, he might not be the best fighter. He's certainly not undefeated anymore. But when he does land the punch he wants to land, he is special. And that's why a guy like him can come up short in our sport, and people will still pay to see him.
Right.
You know, and he's still interesting, you know what I mean? Because he does have ability, and he does try his best. I've never seen him sort of not try. And it's almost like every time he fights, it's almost like a car wreck waiting to happen. You know, it's like bad omen is written in the stars. You don't want to take your eyes off it. You just want to watch it in case it happens. You don't want to miss it. You know, and as long as he can do
that. Train wreck.
Yeah, as long as he can do that, he can remain very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I was trying to go back and think about all of the knockouts this year. And, you know, I'll tell you this, and I'm sorry if I'm doing this to you, because I hate when people do to me. When people ask me, do you think that was knockout of the year, or can you think of any other knockouts during the year? Because, I mean, I've seen so many fights this year, I tend to forget what happened. Or as far as what happened this year, you know what I mean? Like, something could have happened the end of last year, and I thought it was this year, if you get what I'm saying. But I think, by far, that this might be knockout of the year candidate, definitely. And it's what a thing to see that we got a knockout of the year candidate and a fight of the year candidate all in the same weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it all depends on exactly what you mean by the knockout of the year, right? Some people like relevance. For example, if like Mike Tyson knocks out what's his name for the heavyweight title, like that's a big deal. So that's the knockout of the year. Or you want just a clean, cold, brutal knockout, regardless of who did it to whom, then I think this fits that mold a little bit better, just in terms of a punch that literally turns someone's lights out and ended the fight right there and then. You know, not a TKO, not a slow stoppage, just an instant boom, instant victory. If that's your definition of knockout of the year, then this one is hard to beat.
Now, let me ask you, what's your opinion on that? Knockout of the year, do you think that has to be straight up one punch, 10 count knockout, or do you think a TKO, you know, guy get, you know, the ref stopped it because the guy, he knows the guy shouldn't be continuing anymore or whatever. Like, what do you feel should be considered a knockout of the year?
It's tough for me because if we're talking about of the year, then we have to be specific. We have to really try hard. So for me, it needs to be between the two, right? It needs to be a good, clean knockout, and it needs to be somewhat of a relevant fight. You know what I mean? Like, not only does the knockout have to be good, but the fact that the knockout happened, like, this fight has to be meaningful. And it's hard to get that kind of, you know, to, like, narrow it down to that degree. But we're talking about, again, knockout of the year here. We should try to narrow it down as much as possible. So for me, it needs to have both. It needs to have relevance and it needs to be a good knockout. If we don't get that, then for me, I go with what everybody else does, which is just go for the best-looking one.
Right, right. Yeah, I definitely believe that, too. I like you said, it's hard to see a meaningful fight go in the end in the knockout. Do you think that applies to a fight of the year, too, and needs to be a meaningful fight?
Ooh, man. Fight of the year, I think to some degree, yes. I think to some degree, it's got to be a high-level fight. I wanted to say world-class just now, but I wanted to avoid that because world-class seems to imply that both guys need titles, and that's not what I mean. What I mean is, like, both guys have got to show a lot of skill in a tough battle.
Right.
You know what I mean? like it should be a good competitive, intense fight, but I should walk away saying, man, the way those two guys fought, if they were in the ring with anybody else in their division, that would, you know, they would have won. You know, like, I need to be able to say that about a fight of the year. You see what I mean?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I agree. It just, to me, it has to be, first of all, entertaining, very competitive, back and forth. But it has to be something that, you know, people can relate to. I really think that right now Brandon Reels is the head one, you know. But I want to, before we close up the show, and, you know, we still got a little bit of time left, so if anyone does want to call in, go ahead and call in at 347-215-7598. We'll get you in. But like we usually do, I want to do some rants and raves. I got to rave about something. I'm impressed and happy with the turnout from what I saw on TV and from what I heard from people in attendance of the turnout at Home Depot Center. The fans showed up and they stuck around. And as we know in L.A., it gets very Hollywood-ish type people that don't like to show up. And people showed up, and I think they did a great job. I think Top Rank showed the people who showed up a treat. And that's what's great for boxing is we need stuff like this, events like this, fans who show up, buy their tickets, however they get it, you know, just go up and show their support for boxing in the community. And it was a great showing, I thought, this time at the Home Depot Center, better than what we've seen in the past in L.A. of late. Got anything you want to rave about or touch on that?
Yeah, just to touch on that, I thought it was a really good crowd from my position as, you know, from home as a TV audience member, is that the crowd didn't seem to be part of it, right? They seemed to have just been cheering the whole fight, especially in the Rios Alvarado fight. You know, it wasn't like one of those, like, oh, man, this is an intense fight, but the crowd is completely one-sided, so as I'm watching it, it's making me feel awkward. It wasn't any of that. Whenever they would exchange, everybody would cheer them on enthusiastically. And if one guy gets a good moment, they would cheer for him. If another guy gets a good moment, they would cheer for him. It didn't really seem like it was a home crowd for either fighter, and it's really one of those atmospheres where it was everybody's having a good time. It was a good moment for boxing, and that the better man won and was given credit. I think that's, like, the most important thing, and we don't get that enough in boxing. It's one of those rare nights where everything sort of came together pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? I got to make a little, you know, little funny, I don't know, joke observation with it, or something that would have been awesome. If between rounds of the Rios-Alvarado fight, both fighters go to the corner and, you know, they look at the fans and they yell, "Are you not entertained?" You know, quote from Gladiators, you know, something like that. That, because that was the definition of a gladiator sport, right? Those two guys going at it. I mean, everyone had to be entertained for that fight. The electricity, I had chills watching it, you know.
I mean, I'm just surprised by, like, how it really all went down. Because if you saw between each round, you know, as the bell rang to end the round, they would actually sort of, like, nod at each other. You know, like, it's still very sportsmanlike.
Right.
I mean, like they would stop punching, and then they would sort of acknowledge one another, and they would go back to their corners, and then when the bell rings, they would come out, and they would fight again. And there's no dirty tactics, none of that. It was just, I'm trying to beat you, I'm trying to, you know, you do my thing, you're trying to do your thing. It was just, it was clean, right? Like I said, you know, Brandon Reels, you know, Mike Alvarado deserves a lot of credit. They put, not every good matchup on paper translates to the ring. And these two guys, I feel like, was actually trying to make an effort to give everybody the fight that they want. And I think both guys are proud guys. They wouldn't fight in any way that they thought would disappoint people. That's just their personality. Personality counts for a lot.
Yeah, and one thing we didn't even talk about with Brandon Reels, I don't know if you caught it, it was after the first round, he's in the corner, you know, Garcia's telling him instructions, and Reels says, "I love this shit. I love this shit. I live for it."
I mean,
that sums up the night.
It's definitely, like, he's obviously a strong kid who's got boxing skill, but it's his mind, you know, like, it's his personality that really makes the whole thing work, because it's the mind's in charge of the body, right? Like, if you put me or anyone else into Brandon Reels on that particular night and then tell us to fight that fight, it would turn out differently. You know what I mean? Like, temperaments do make a difference. And Brandon Rios has a proper temperament for this kind of thing. And when you match him correctly, he's consistently entertaining. So he's a reliable guy, and reliable guys are the best type of guys in this sport, in my opinion. I'd rather have a reliable guy than a perfect guy who does everything well, you know?
Definitely, definitely. Now, do you have anything else you wanted? You got something to rave about from this weekend's fight?
That's it, man. I mean, it's a good weekend in boxing. If only every week was like this. If only every time we made a good matchup on paper that it translates to the ring, then we'd be good as a sport, right? If common sense was actually common sense, sort of thing. If what made sense actually made sense. But
right.
As we know with the Cold War, I mean, fights like these just makes that Cold War between Top Rank and Golden Boy that much more frustrating, because you hate to be reminded of the bullshit in boxing after you just have a good time. You know, you'd be like, oh, man, that was great, but, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere after this. You know, that's the worst part.
So exactly.
Maybe if the – I mean, I don't know how much power our voice has as fans and as members of the boxing world and so on. But if enough people go out there – I mean, this is very important, right? Like, boxing fans need to just keep talking. I mean, the Internet is very powerful, right? When you keep giving your opinion, even though it might not catch on at first, promoters, people like that, people in charge, they see these things. You know what I mean? It would behoove them to give the people what they want here and there, because it's smart for them. It's financially, you know, good for them to give the people what they want. There's no reason why they should keep something up just out of whatever drama they used to have. So if people keep talking about fights they want to see, you never know. Things can change.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm glad that Cold War, or I'm not glad that the Cold War is still going on with this. But next week we got some good fights. We got a nice little card on Showtime with a quadruple header that they're going to show over at the new Barclays Center. So that should be entertaining. I'm excited to see Alexander Bailey and Paulie Malignaggi on the card against Cano. Garcia against Morales again. Not too excited and thrilled about that, but hey, you know, it's boxing. We got to watch once. Horrible matchup a night, I guess. But I definitely think it could be a possible good card. It's good to see you boxing back in Brooklyn.
I mean, I'm assuming the Garcia Morales fight is the main event.
Yeah.
The last thing people see in the evening, you know?
Yeah. From what I know, that is going to be the headliner.
I mean, it is for a world title, so it is a world championship fight, and it is between two. I don't know, man.
Yeah,
like, who else are they
going to
put? Like that three title fight, which one was going to be the main event? Devin Alexander, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a good card. I like what Showtime does. It shows all, like, four fights, you know, all four, you know, and the undercard and everything. I like that. So that's what I'm looking forward to. I think Alexander Bailey might be an entertaining fight, maybe, for maybe the first half of the fight. At the end of the day, I think, you know, Alexander continues, you know, his speed and everything's going to overwhelm Bailey. But I'm curious to see the atmosphere at the Barclays Center.
I think the Malignaggi fight might be okay, too.
Yeah.
I like watching him fight.
I do, too. I'm a fan of Malignaggi. I think he's funny. See, that should have been the main event, being that I was in Brooklyn, but... And
it would never make Paulie the main event, I don't think.
Right. No, I agree. But if you think about it, it's in Brooklyn. He needs a loud mouth and everything.
Right.
But, yeah. But before we're about to wrap up the show, you want to give out your shout-out saying the last thing, David?
Nothing else, man. Just reminding everybody to tune in for Leave It in the Ring 2 this upcoming Thursday, where we're going to be talking more in depth about all these things we just talked about tonight. That's my fight. And we're going to be doing that with Dave Duenas and Gabe Montoya. That'll be a good time, too. Other than that, just stay safe for the whole week, everybody. And tune in next week for next weekend's fights. It never stops.
Definitely, definitely. And thanks again for helping me out and co-hosting and riding with me on this fun day in boxing, man. It's great. And for everyone who joined us and all the listeners, thank you once again. And tune in next week on another episode of the Boxing Fix, where all you boxing fans and boxing addicts get your fix.
All right, be good, everybody. Stay safe out there. See you next week.